can see my camera, my background has improved for the first time.
Looking beautiful, Jay, looking beautiful.
Yeah, we can grow on our own on these things. Thank you, honorable members. Lovely seeing you. May I do credentials first, Lindy? How are we here?
Good morning, members, officials today. Chairperson, I would like to confirm the following members that are already joined the meeting. Number one is you, Chair, Member Kungubele. I have Member Ayres. I have Member Ngwenya. I have Member Abrahams. I have Member Mbana. I have Member Fanda Merve. I have Member Cook. I also have Member Briette. That's all thus far. So we are a quorum, Chairperson, because we are 8 members out of 11. So we can proceed officially the proceedings of today's meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Zabo. Honourable members, may I take this opportunity to welcome you all during one of our very important meetings of doing our oversight work. We have not spoken about pandemic for quite some time now. The president is expected to table before Parliament economic recovery plan. We will all interface with that, and we want anticipate that to be dealing with a response to the legacy or what we call the aftermath of the pandemic. Also, as a committee at level one, we are expected to stay in touch with regard to the progress in dealing with the virus. It's therefore important to get such interface with the department. Of course, we also are busy with the panel that you put together as a committee to deal with CDA, something we hope to finish before the end of the year. One of the most important things, honorable members, which I think we need to do, we're going to look at is pandemic has actually not helped us to do oversight. For instance, when you go to issues like queuing moments, elderly, people sleeping a night before, around the pay points, and a number of challenges that people are facing around these queues, accessing their money, and the challenge of communicating the new forms of payments by the department, and the issues of GPV, all these issues, food, parcels, dealing with issues of poverty, who has access to food and so on, challenges of the shortage of social workers. This is a sort of issues that as committee, we are supposed to at times go out and see things for ourselves. So it's my wish that if the program so allow that before the end of this year, we must have done some oversights, a feel and touch as a committee. Mm-hmm. Having said all that, I will take this opportunity to welcome you in the family of Social Development Portfolio Committee and ask Lindwe to put the agenda before us.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Before I put agenda, with your permission, can I also report tender an apology on behalf of the minister who attended a special meeting today? Is it accepted, Chair?
Maybe we'll table the agenda. We'll deal with that item. But before you go there, I must also take this opportunity to welcome the department and the deputy minister. And I feel bad that we've got such a good relationship with the department. And I can't imagine how did I forget to welcome their department. Mm-hmm. Deputy Minister, ATG, and all the senior management of the department. Proceed, Lindy.
Okay.
Put the agenda so that we can adopt it, and then we can deal with the apology.
Yes, agenda, Chair. Is it visible enough?
For me, it is, but take it up a bit. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Okay, sure.
I'm sure everyone does see it now. Honorable members, that is the agenda. Apologies, adoption of the agenda, briefing by the Department of Social Development on pandemic, adoption of the committee report as internal business of the committee, and also something minutes. Thank you. And the program, the term program. Those are the issues. Pandemic, adoption of the committee reports, minutes, and the term program. Honorable members, I'm tabling the program, the agenda, sorry.
I will move for the adoption, Chairperson, Honorable Fanamara.
Thank you.
Honorable Vana,
agenda. Moved for adoption and seconded. Let's do the apology.
Chairperson, there's only one apology I've received from the minister who attended the special cabinet meeting today. By the way,
it's Wednesday today.
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other apology?
That's the only apology I've received, Chairperson. I haven't received any other apology.
Thank you, honorable members. The minister is attending the cabinet meeting.
Honorable Mvana speaking.
Yes, honorable Mvana.
Can I move for the acceptance of that apology, Chair?
Seconded by honorable Ngwenyi.
Yes, Chair, seconded.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair.
Yes, I'm listening.
It is Honorable Sukazia. I'm just notifying you of my presence in the meeting.
Oh, you are welcome. Where have you been, Honorable Sukazia?
I have been in the meeting, Honorable Chairperson,
no,
last week.
I've not been hearing your voice.
I've been ill.
Oh, are you fine now?
Yes, I am.
Let's thank God for that, okay? Please join the family. Let's go ahead. Now, Honorable GM, why in your hand?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and morning, Honorable members. Let me upfront say, apologize, I am not a case. So I'm going to just indicate that we continue to do our work.
Honorable Deputy Minister, why are you jumping?
Why am I?
You look like you are jumping.
I'm in the car, Chairperson, I'm not jumping.
Okay, proceed. Okay. All right, proceed, Jim.
Thank you. So, Chairperson, we continue to strive to actually get the government to be more responsive to the issues of our sector. I think it has the cabinet of the and once again, we committed ourselves to making sure that we continue to be given the necessary resources to intervene and carry South Africans through the particular situation. We also have to be supportive in terms of creating job opportunities within the different sectors of social development. We bring the most important reminding members of the pandemic and the challenges that we continue to experience in reaching out getting things done. Without their taking too much time, they are in that mental such a way. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, dear ADG.
Very good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you for the opportunity once again to present to this important committee around the work we are doing, specifically today on the measures put in place by the department, or the portfolio rather, to respond to COVID-19 pandemic. I think if we can thank you once again, DM, for those remarks as well. I will not spend a lot of time in dealing with introductory remarks, but I'll get straight into the presentation. So if you could go straight to slide number 2, and maybe slide number 3, actually. Slide number 2 basically speaks about the issues that we will speak to today. Go to slide number 3. I think what we want to highlight, Chairperson, is that the country is still very much on level 1, of the alert level 1 of the risk-adjusted strategy, of the national state of disaster, which is still in effect. with the lockdown still in place and a very high possibility of the second wave, and I think members may have been hearing reports around the possibility of a second wave coming. We don't know the exact time when the wave will come, but we do anticipate that there will be a second wave in place coming. And the fact that we are still on level 1 means that the curfew remains in place. Excuse me, the restrictions on gatherings, including religious events and sports, also remain in place. The restrictions in terms of the sale of alcohol are still in place, and I'll speak in detail about that later in the presentation. We are saying that controlled visits to facilities and centres, especially those run by the department, are in place. So visits are allowed, but with very strict measures in place. And of course, interprovincial travel remains open. Now also with inter-country travel allowed, of course, with selected countries with the low impact on COVID-19. And I will speak to some of those areas, what that means for us as the portfolio. I think it's important to note that the number of infections has decreased significantly in the past few weeks, and we are sitting on a recovery rate of 90% now, if I'm not mistaken. And we are seeing less people being admitted in hospitals, but we still have serious challenges around alcohol abuse, which is, of course, taking strain in the healthcare system. And I'll speak a little bit to that as well. But I think the important thing is that even though I think we are number 11 now in terms of infection rates, we have come down. We were originally in the top 5 and the top 10 as well. We're now at number 11, but we have a significantly very high recovery rate as a country. And I think that's because of the various measures that government has put in place to ensure that at least the early slowdown of the virus, and I think we are reaping the fruits of that now. Notwithstanding, of course, that we still have some cases on a daily basis, and those have significantly decreased. But I think the measures that we put in place for me are fundamental and are a test to those measures are an indication of the fact that we are not as high on the list as was. I think I also want to highlight that the past few months have really been difficult for us, catastrophic period in the history of all mankind. Previously, when I did the presentation, I indicated that we have stepped into a new world order, because the world we left in March is a world we'll never return to, and the world we are in now is a completely new world, and we are being forced to adapt accordingly in this regard. And I think in line with some of the measures the government has put, you would recall that the president announced a very progressive support package 500 billion rands for both economic and social support. And I think that has been going extremely well. And we'll speak to some of these areas in this regard. I think I also wanted to indicate that the portfolio, as the DSD, we've been at the forefront in providing essential services and interventions that became the buffer and prevented millions from falling into the cracks of severe impoverishment. We reached millions of people through our supports and our services across the Republic through the social measures, particularly through food support, grants, and of course psychosocial support and other care-related matters. We did this to ensure that the survival of individuals and families. I think the fundamental point to raise that we would have lost much more people without the interventions that the department has put in place, because our interventions really speak to essential services around the survival of people, particularly from a social perspective. And I think as we continue to learn various lessons, and I'll speak to some of those later in the presentation and the experiences, but I think the most important thing is to indicate that we've taken the wisdom and the guidance from the portfolio committee and started putting some of those areas and measures in place, and we'll speak to some of those that we've achieved. And I think that has been a useful exercise, having this discourse with the committee, and that we're able to gain some guidance. Of course, some members have also reached out to us on a range of issues, and I'll speak to some of those that we've been able to address as well through various correspondence. I think we are then getting a better sense of what works and what doesn't work as a portfolio, and we'll speak to some of these areas. We'll speak to some of the new ways in which we are beginning to work, operate our services, and some of the experiences that we're getting out of that. I think a critical thing is to highlight the fact that COVID-19 was largely as a result of behavioral change. And we continue to punt the message and encourage.
Somebody must mute, please. Please, guys, leave your children be in parliament.
Well, so, thank you, Chair. So we continue to highlight the messages of behavioral change, and again, mainly to avoid the second wave. And there are a number of key messages that the government has been putting out, and we've been doing that as well, around everybody playing their part to save lives, guarding against the second wave, and then behavioral change is the only way out, etc., and encouraging people to really play their part. If you could go to the next slide. I think in line with the social behavioral change work, I want to highlight that Minister Zulu and Minister Mkhize at Department of Health started what we call now a Ministerial Advisory Committee on Social and Behavioral Change, because this was the crux of the problem with COVID-19. There were times where you'd go into neighborhoods, into townships, and you'll see that in some areas there's just a blunt people ignoring the protocols and so on and so forth. There's still mass gatherings in some areas. There's still congestion in a number of areas, people not wearing masks, etc. And we thought that what was fundamental was to find a way of getting those in society who have reach. And we got a group of clergy or interfaith leaders, some NGOs, as well as traditional leaders, and traditional healers, and in some cases, some people who are prominent in communities to start this behavioral change program and issue a number of advisories in relation to this program. And I think they've done good work around a number of areas, including debt management concerns, personal protective equipment, citizens mobilization, and particularly social vulnerable persons, which are in the main older persons, and in some cases persons with disabilities. I think some of the advisories also touched on supporting socially vulnerable persons through grief, and advisories on responsibility for regulations, compliance at home of deceased, at funeral venues and at cemeteries. We saw some challenges around that during the lockdown in the main, and we've put out a range of advisories through the assistance of this advisory committee as led by the two ministers. I think I also wanted to indicate that the MAC advisor on strategies for promoting the implementation of social behavioral change, including effective communication, mobilization of communities, and identification of barriers to implementation faced by people in various communities and sectors. And we've been able to do this largely through virtual engagement, but there has also been some community outreach engagements, of course, with adherence to protocols, and I'll speak to one of them later in the presentation. If you could go to the next slide. Now, we've endeavored to ensure that all staff of our portfolio and clients that come into the portfolio are taken care of, particularly into the building, and are safe. And we've put various measures in place to ensure that we protect staff from contracting COVID. And of course, we've had a number of staff that have been affected and infected. And we've also lost a number of lives, and I'll speak to that in the next slide. But for now, let me just highlight that our offices are assessed in terms of the OHS Occupational Health and Safety Act. As well as the COVID-19 walkthrough risk assessment. We had a risk assessment that was able to guide us and tell us that these are the areas where we are short or that we are not compliant in. These are the areas that we need to address and so on and so forth. So one of the areas was the fact that the quality of masks we got were not good masks, and we had to change that and ensure that we have proper cloth masks so that staff, and we had to provide those masks for staff, so that colleagues are not having excuses of not coming to the office, there being not measures in place. So we've ensured that we've put those measures in place. We have a workplace and wellness work stream that meets on a regular basis to ensure that we take stock of that, in addition to the OHS committee. Really, they support the occupational health and safety committees established across the sector. We've identified those areas of improvement, as I've indicated, and I think we've done exceptionally well to avoid it. You'll see that through the numbers as I go on. And I think we've also established a set of protocols in line with the Department of Health, Labour and TPSA regulations that ensure the safety of staff and clients coming into the offices, and these are applied accordingly. I won't go through the details of that, but I can tell you that these are measures that they're putting, stringent measures put in place to ensure the safety of clients and staff. Then we have continued with awareness and education programs to our staff as well in the main, in respect of measures to manage and adhere to workplace protocols that we've put in place. And staff with comorbidities are guided by these protocols, and all staff have been back at work under level one, and those with comorbidities, of course, continue to work from home. If you could go to the next slide. I think here we just wanted to highlight to you the numbers of cases that we've had in so far as staff are concerned, because it's the staff actually that render the services. And we need to understand that whilst we are protecting the millions of people out there in terms of providing services, our staff are also at risk, and we need to ensure that we put measures in place to address that. And some, unfortunately, and you'll see the number 33 have died, and most of them have died, or some of them rather, in the line of duty. And again, we want to just ensure that we highlight that their souls may rest in peace. We've lost a number of critical staff, both at national and within the provinces. There's been a gap that has been created, which is not easy to fill. And of course, most colleagues would recall that even in our very own office, we've had those. So we've had 33 deaths, but what I want to highlight here is the recovery rate. We're sitting at around 92% of the recovery rate. You'll see that we have most employees that have recovered quite well, this is in line also with the national statistics. And again, I think it's a test in the measures that we've put in place and the guidance that we engage with our staff on. All colleagues in our portfolio that have contracted the virus were contacted on a daily basis, on a regular basis by our staff, by our nurses, because we've had to also employ nurses to assist in that regard, and to ensure that we're able to take them through a wellness program as well in that regard. We do this not just for the officials, but also for their families, because they're affected and infected. I think I just wanted to also highlight on the previous slide the fact that we've had to close offices a number of times, and this has had some disruptions in terms of the work that we do. But every time, it's not necessarily the entire office that is closed. It's just those areas that may have been affected, and we're able to quickly recover from those closures and communicate accordingly to the public as well in that regard. We can go to the next slide. I think here we have to again make sure that all our centres are compliant in terms of the regulations and the guidelines. And we've had to issue protocols and guidelines as majority of our services are still very contact services that we provide. I won't go through everything here, but I will just highlight that in terms of the CNDCs, visits to, by beneficiaries to gathering, seating and eating in CNDCs are allowed. And their health officers in most of these, in all of our CNDCs to ensure that people comply. And we do symptom screening, social distancing, and we provide personal protective equipment as well. And we encourage social distancing in a range of other areas. I think I want to highlight the NPO registration one. And I think Honorable Masango may remember in some instances where some of the members of the public have indicated that they've come to an office and it's been closed. In those cases, some of the offices were closed because of the decontamination that we had to do in the offices. But we were able to assist, and I think Honorable Masango would be able to pay testament that we're able to assist those members. We were able to contact them immediately, those members of society, and we're able to assist them in the registration of NPOs. And our team played a critical role in that regard. But even though we still have the NPO desk open for registration purposes, we also do have an online service that we provide for NPO registration. But we've noted that, the bulk of the people who still come, some of them come to collect their certificates physically, of course, but some still prefer to come to the office rather than using an online registration process. But we maintain the protocols in this regard and ensure that they are followed to the T. We also, I won't speak to the other services, but I'll just largely indicate that our old age homes are allowed with strict visitations with COVID measures in place. And of course, those children that were in our centers are now appearing in court in person, but of course in adherence to regulations and protocols. Our treatment centers, our shelters and ECDs continue to be open with various measures put in place. I think with the fact that international travel is now allowed, it's also given an opportunity for us to proceed with international adoptions at level one. And so we've opened that up and we are working through that process accordingly. Next slide. The reopening of social services centers, just to continue on this, I think I just wanted to indicate that some of our awareness campaigns have continued. Although some would normally be held in venues where there are crowds of people and so on, but some of them we've had to indicate that most of them cannot stop because of that. So we've adapted by having those virtual. And I think some members would remember the Child Protection Day that we had recently in May, also the International Day of Against Alcohol and Illicit Drugs, which we also hosted online. And I think some members may have tapped into that. But in all our provinces that have treatment centers and a number of other centers, we ensure that some of the programs continue, but very, very strict conditions. For example, some of the services, some of the support that we provide to groups, we're doing them in groups at aftercare service facilities and so on. So we do them in very restricted groups. And we do think that we can do more, particularly in terms of the treatment centers, because when service users are taken through various programs, they then leave the rehab centers and go back into their families. But we think that there's more that we can do around introducing service users to more, by assisting them to unlock their potential, particularly with the skills that they have, so that they're able to also contribute to the economy. And we're working on some of those programs. They're not moving as fast as we would like them to. But these are programs that we will ensure that we pick up the pace on. I think with capacity building, just to also indicate, we do some capacity building programs and we've continued with some. In some instances, we've trained additional social workers, particularly on trauma counseling, and those particularly to assist us with gender-based violence. We've also trained departmental staff in our residential facilities on COVID-19 measures together with the Department of Health, etc. I think I just wanted to indicate that the community-based care and support services for older persons are still closed because of the high risk and exposure. So the programs rather are not taking place in those centers because of the high risk and exposure to the virus for older persons. But we are working on reopening these and ensuring that those measures that are in place are also strict. You can go to the next slide. Okay, so here we are not, and I won't spend a lot of time, but just wanted to highlight that pre-COVID, of course, you'd recall that what we used to do is provide cooked meals in our centers in the main, and we've shifted from that because of the congestion and numbers, but also because of just the safety in that regard. We've decided that what we would do is provide food parcels instead. I must say that we've also shifted to utilize a hybrid approach between food parcels and food vouchers. We've started rolling out food vouchers, particularly at SASSA, through the SRD grant. We are still working on piloting some of those, but we've started rolling those out, and from those that we've rolled out, I think we're getting good responses from recipients in that it's easier for them to be able to access that. Of course, we are also highlighting the importance of various agents, including business, private sector, etc., who have been part and parcel of working with us through the provision of food. Of course, we have some challenges around coordination in that we didn't always know who was providing what to whom. But I think that over time, what has happened is we've sort of gone past that, and we've just encouraged people to ensure that they provide a good sense of dignity to those who are receiving those food parcels, and ensure that food is not expired. In some cases, we found that food was expired, and ensure that it's non-perishable goods that are provided, and that it's generally in good condition, and that we avoid congestion and avoid long lines, etc. This slide, we are just highlighting to you that we've managed to feed close to 5 million people with just about 1 million food parcels overall. And the breakdown is there for province. You'll note that Gauteng was the highest province that we extended food support to, and the Northwest was the lowest because I think also of population that is in the provinces. Excuse me. I think I just wanted to highlight a very important point on this slide, which is that I know we've listed some private sector here, but I think there are many others, including the Church of the Latter-day Saints, SPA, NEF, Procter & Gamble, and a number of others that we've engaged with that have been part and parcel and really working with us and helping us in the distribution of food parcels. But I think we must send a very special message of appreciation to ordinary South Africans who at a time stop at the robot and give food to people who are hungry, who at a time go to various places and be able to provide food packages and food parcels to those that are most vulnerable. And I think ordinary South Africans really, through their own humanity and, of course, within the spirit of Ubuntu, really gathered around and ensured that nobody goes hungry against the call of the president that he's made, that we shouldn't allow anybody to go hungry. And I think it's very important to really appreciate ordinary South Africans who have played a critical role in ensuring that people don't go hungry and people have a plate of food to eat in the night. So it's a fundamental thing that we sometimes omit to do, and I think it's important that we do so in this context. If we could go to the next slide. I think what we wanted to highlight here, and I won't go through everything because the presentation has been sent, really was that, and I spoke to it at the beginning, one of the biggest challenges that we faced, and we felt the pressure as social development because of the abuse of alcohol. And I think there are various measures that government has put in place. I think the critical thing here to highlight is that it's placed a massive strain, not just on families, but also on the healthcare system, including on social workers, because we've had an increase in the number of gender-based violence as a contributor of alcohol abuse. We've had it's also an increase to, a contributor to social ills and a number of other matters that are unbecoming. We've seen lately the brutal killing of women and the brutal killing of kids. And in some cases, it's been as a result of alcohol abuse. And so government has taken some concerted measures, particularly during the lockdown, to ensure that we try and curb. And even though the sale of alcohol is still open, it's only to a reduced number of days. And I think the issue around drinking and driving has also increased quite drastically. And we've seen a number of roadblocks taking place, would still arrange a whole lot of people being found wanting food, drinking and driving. And through our behavioral change programs, we're trying to shift some of these things and instill strong values around the negative impacts that could be caused by non-responsible drinking in this regard. I won't go to much of the other areas, but just to say there's also areas that have been looked at in terms of advertising and packaging, as well as pricing, and you'd note some of the measures in this regard. Treatments and brief interventions, we've had to intensify our support in terms of counseling in this regard, particularly with persons struggling with the dependence on alcohol. And I think this is a difficult cause that really requires all of us, not just as government, but as civil society, and even in the case of private sector, to ensure that we are able to address this issue of alcohol. It's a grave concern. And I heard the Minister of Police asking once, what is it that is in this alcohol that just makes people act and behave in the way in which they do? What is it that is so peculiar and special in alcohol that that allows people to react in this way? But anyway, let's move to the next slide. Here we are saying that the President, you'd recall, honorable members, highlighted the importance, or rather indicated that the first pandemic is COVID-19. But we have another pandemic in the country. This is how serious this thing is, that the President has declared as a second pandemic. And that's the spread or the rise or the increase of gender-based violence and femicide. It continues to be a serious challenge. It's something that the President has elevated. That said, one of the things that the President has decided to do, and we are working very closely with the Presidency and other organizations, departments rather, in this regard, is to ensure that we have a Khuselega one-stop model replicated in all different provinces. If you go to the next slide, I will come back to the slide. If you go to the slide, you'll note that, and before I, maybe let's go back to the previous slide. Let me just highlight what the Khuselega Center is. It's a multidisciplinary approach to respond to victims of gender-based violence and femicide, as well as prevention of further victimization. And this is through the provision of the following services: psychosocial support, prosecution services, healthcare services, steps in prioritizing investigation, women economic empowerment at the house, and housing services, and it's a provisional state-owned facility that will increase and promote access to services. It's a one-stop shop where victims of gender-based violence can go to, instead of going to, having to go to the police station and then having to go to the clinic or to the hospital, etc. They will get all that support in a one-stop center. I just wanted to highlight that in terms of, of course, we have shelters, and we have about 136 shelters across the country. And the President's desire was to have a shelter in every district. And currently there are 8 districts without shelters. And we're working with those provinces to ensure that we provide that level of support to ensure that we have shelters in those specific districts. Because ideally, it would be good if we have shelters in every single district. I don't think that it's something to gloat about when you have so many shelters, because it's an indication that this pandemic is on the rise. What we should strive towards is reducing the shelters, actually, post having dealt with the challenges that we have that we've had. So as we increase the shelters, we should find a way of ensuring that when the second pandemic dies down, that actually we are beginning to close some of the shelters. We fund about 117 shelters for gender-based violence currently. We've made concerted calls, and we know that it's a challenge, the fact that shelters are not adequately funded. We're doing our utmost best in this regard to ensure that we provide support to shelters. And as you can see, we're already funding 117, and we're trying to engage with Treasury and other institutions to ensure that we have additional support. Unfortunately, the fiscus is extremely strained, but we still continue to advocate for the funding of shelters. The next slide really just speaks to where shelters currently are. The green, you'll see that in 3 provinces, there are currently existing shelters that are operational. In the 2 provinces that are yellow, particularly KZN and Tshwane, we are saying that we're in advanced discussions with the 2 provinces in ensuring that we have these centers or these shelters available. And yesterday we had a discussion with all provinces around the establishment of Khuseleka Centres. And provinces reported that they're making some progress. Some have already identified the infrastructure and the buildings, have identified those buildings together with the help of Department of Public Works. We are also have started rigorously advocating for funding to support these centers. I think one Khuseleka center, if I'm not mistaken, I can't remember the exact numbers, but will cost us in the region of around 20 million rands. And we are working in trying to mobilize our various partners to ensure that we get the support. Next slide. I wanted to indicate that in terms of the issue around gender-based violence, you would recall that we had around 95 million rands that we received from the proceeds of crime. We've then distributed some of that money. We've already paid the first tranche to about 312 CSOs that have been through the process, sort of a rigorous process to identify those CSOs. And what we've done here, in order to spread the money and ensure that we have more CSO supporters, we've decided that we give both emerging CSOs as well as those CSOs that have been in operation for a long time. The reason why we want to support emerging CSOs is because in most cases, when CSOs apply for funding from other institutions, international organizations in the main, they often want to know what level of finances they've managed before. And it's a challenge for emerging CSOs, particularly Black-run CSOs, to access support from other organizations and international organizations in the main. So this is a step in the right direction in that we're empowering them to be able to handle this kind of funding and to be able to deal with the challenges that we have. So I won't go through the specifics here, but just to say that we've paid the first tranche and we're in the process of paying the second tranche to these CSOs. And that's around, I think it's around 95 million rands altogether. We've also benchmarked a percentage of this money to be able to train, especially emerging CSOs, to train them in a range of issues so that they're able to be compliant with the various processes that go with the program. Let me now allow the CEO of the NDA to speak on this slide. Next slide. Next slide. To then speak on some of the interventions that have been done in the NDA. CEO of the NDA.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I think colleagues and DG, I think DG has touched on the CARA one. On the NDA volunteer program, we continue to service in partnership with SASA, in partnership with social development. As the strategy changes with the new regulations, as we get into the lower levels of the COVID regulations, we continue ourselves to align. As we started with hot meals, hot cooked meals, we are continuing with our field workers or our volunteers on the ground to align with the changing of the strategy. They've also gotten into a space of assisting the CARA recipients on grants, the way in which they do their administration work, the way in which they continue to advocate and educate on COVID education, they've linked with those funded CARA projects as well. So basically is to say we continue to visit the households, we continue with our statistics in terms of the households that we have visited, and the households in terms of food parcels that they've received, and the information that we gather. With the Department of Health, we have sessions where these volunteers, they report the experiences, the issues, the challenges that they confronted with, like those beneficiaries who have since stopped taking their medication with TB-related issues, the issues of SASA in the main, the SAPO challenges, we continue to interface with SASA in arranging and in resolving those challenges. Basically, on a part of volunteers, we're still proceeding as we had contracted them to as a portfolio. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, CEO. If we can go to the next slide, can we allow the CEO of SASA to quickly take us through the social interventions that we put in place? CEO?
Good afternoon, honorable members. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. Thank you, DG and colleagues. Chair, it's very important to highlight that at the time when we submitted the presentation to Parliament, it was last week at the time when we're actually focusing on the payments of our normal grants, hence the slide was not updated in relation to the numbers with regards to September, October. So those numbers are now available and I will talk to them. In terms of the SRD, COVID-19 SRD grant, for August, we have, as indicated there, actually approved paid 4.5 million clients, which is 73% of the total number of clients that we needed to pay. The challenge we had was the continued challenge, which is the availability of the banking accounts. What we were trying to avoid in this particular instance was to continue to pay people through post office because of the challenge that we have with the issue of queues. We hoped that by now we would actually have the voucher that we've been looking at in terms of an electronic voucher. And we had also hoped that many of the clients could also be paid using the cash send. But we're finding that many of the cell phones that actually are sent through are cell phones that are not recard, which makes it challenging for us to pay through those numbers. We then opted that if of the 1.2 million people, we will again have to pay them through the post office so that we don't continue to delay the payment. For the month of September and October, we've decided that we're going to pay for both months in terms of the number of people that need to be paid. In the previous presentation, a submission that we made, we had not highlighted as to what the numbers were in terms of the number of people that have been approved. The numbers have ticked up a bit to 6 million, and those are the people that we're going to focus on paying on this month for both September and October. So those are the, just in relation to the processed persons and the number of people that needed to be paid. The overall numbers of people that we've actually paid cumulatively is 18.5 million transactions that had to be paid at the cost of 6.4 billion. So that's what we've already paid out in terms of all the amounts that we've paid over the past months. And we're going to clear out for both August, September and October. August, the 1.2 million that I referred to, and for September, which is all the numbers that we've actually already validated. I spoke to the 1.2 million in terms of how we're going to ensure that payment happens. Already, Postbank has already opened 650,000 accounts. And as they open the account, we then pay into those different accounts to make sure that those people get cleared and they get paid. And then the challenge becomes ensuring that they can actually get to the post office. And with the challenge of the queues, the concern that we have again is the fact that now that the pandemic is ticking up again, the issue of the queues becomes a challenge. But it doesn't give us much choice if we don't have anywhere else to pay the people. We therefore end up having to use the post office. Can we go to the next slide, Tavane? So these are the numbers that I spoke to earlier on in terms of what has been achieved for both May, June, July, up to September and October. With October, for now, our understanding that October, as per the original announcements, is the last month, and not unless anything changes. For us, we're hoping to clear off to make sure that everybody that's still owed get paid over the next this month. We're going to pay for both September and October. We'll clear August and make sure that we clear out some of those people that have remained from the other months in terms of us not being able to reach them, because our intention is to make sure that come November, we've cleared everybody, we can then start to do all the different reconciliations, unless a different decision is actually being made. So we will hear from both DSD and National Treasury as to where are we going in relation of this particular grant. But in terms of our understanding for now, October becomes the last month, but we still have to pay whatever else still remains. But also we need to make sure that all those people that had actually made the appeals also are cleared and paid. We had to make sure that the directions are changed so that we can find a way of paying them, and we're working. We will have to go through the banks again with regards to the 60,000 that have been paid. And now we have a clear sense of who those people are and which provinces they actually come from. The one thing that is interesting is that based on the report from the AG of the number of people that were paid that shouldn't have been paid, we found that those numbers tick up to about 42,000, which is the numbers that we've actually handed over to our fraud environment so that we can make sure that we can investigate. Over time, we will also go and collect from those people, but we need to make sure that those high-level people that are directors of companies and actually have a contracts with government, that we can hand them over to the law. What's been interesting is that we've had people that have come back to us and said, I am back in my job. I don't need the 350 anymore. It's small numbers, but the fact that we do have people that have come through, it's 43 people only, but they've come back to us to say, can you please cancel the grant because I don't need it anymore. And those are the 43 that we have. And we had all those numbers, particularly in August. Can we go to the next slide, Tabane? It's very important that we had to find a way of how we're going to deal with the declined applications. That's why we could not, all we could do was accept them and document and ensure that we understand who those 60,000 people are initially. But we now have had the directions being looked at, which therefore means that we have a way of reviewing them. After having had the AG looking at all the different areas, it's become much easier for us to begin to engage all the other different stakeholders, one of whom was UIF. We were able to get updated data so that we will run the people again against that data set, but we'll also check in terms of the means test to make sure that we are able to pay all those 60,000 people, assuming that all will actually go through the process and all will pass, which we believe most of them will, because people would not take the trouble to actually lodge a request for reconsideration if they don't think they qualify. The assumption we're making is that all the 60,000 will have to go through, and we're now looking at what the implications are financially in terms of the budget that we have and where else we can find the funds within the bigger pot of our grant space, should there be an issue, because we need to make sure that we have the available funds before we can pay out. For now, we think we're okay in terms of the projections that we've made. We think we should be able to complete the process in terms of the number of people we have, because what we found is as the months go by, the number of people that are also even applying have actually tapered down, and we have not looked at October numbers, but we believe based on what has happened in September, we shouldn't have more than 40,000 people that should apply this month. We will only start the vetting process for them at the end of the month. Just on the basis of projections, we think we should still be okay. Thank you. Can you please go to the next slide? So just to look at the total pocket that we have with regards to all the different grants, Over and above the 350, also had to make sure that we manage the top-up grants, and these we believe are easier to pay off because they are already in the system. And what we've already paid out in terms of the top-up grants, we've already paid out 30 billion to date, and we're still in a current payment process, particularly for those people that get their money from pay points, which is usually fewer numbers, because as we know, most of our clients actually get their money from the normal pay points, the access points, not pay points, and there's only few that go to the pay points. So all those amounts have been paid, which of course include the 500 rands per caregiver that we've been paying, and that has come to about 7.1 million in terms of the caregivers, in terms of amount that we've had to pay from June to October. And the top up for the in terms of the 250 that we're paying for the old age and the other grants comes to about 12 billion. That's what we've paid to date. For the next 2 months, as indicated earlier on, for November and December, is for us to finalize and clear the backlog. And we still have approximately about 3 billion, which already, when one looks at the numbers that we currently have actually been allocated to the people that we need to actually make sure that we pay. So as indicated earlier, from our understanding in terms of where we are now, October is the last month, and we're going to be switching off all application channels, particularly with regards to the other normal grants. With COVID-19, we then need to make sure that we clear up whoever else hasn't been paid and do reconciliation with all the areas where we've been, all the channels we've been using with regard to the banks, make sure that the funds come through, and also with regard to the post office to make sure that all the people that we've paid, if they haven't actually collected the money, what is it that we need to do? So on the top-up grants, because it's a system which is our standard system, we've had to, and again, because it's a mainframe system, we need to program the system in advance. And in terms of where we are making the assumption that we're not going to continue with this grant, not unless we're told otherwise. And we want to advise the House and the portfolio committee members that in terms of where we are, we're going to close off unless we're told differently in terms of what it is that we need to do. Thank you very much. Can you go to the next slide? As we've been engaging with the portfolio committee, we've noted with big concern, and we know that the portfolio committee members have been raising the issue of the impact on the disability grant, starting from the time when we actually closed the offices. The restrictions have had a negative impact particularly on the new clients with disabilities that had to come in because we had a limited access to the offices. What was good was that the minister actually pronounced in terms of us making sure that we can reinstate and continuous payment for temporary disability, for us to make sure that those people that were actually in the system and their grants had lapsed in February up till October, they can continue to be paid up till December. And the care dependency grants also that lapsed in February and May have also up till the end of December in terms of us ensuring that we can pay those people. Similarly, the CDGs that also lapsed in terms of children that are turning 18, because normally what happens is when children turn 18, they then would apply for a different support. We've made sure that we've extended that, and we're working with DSD to ensure that we can look at other solutions, because it therefore means that all those children that were getting that support will have to come in and with the backlog that we have, we know that it would be a bit of a challenge. So working with DSD, and we'll keep the members informed in terms of how this is going to be resolved. But we believe we need to ensure that the children can, without having to go through health facilities, because we know in many instances that these are children with big disabilities, that we can give them a time for them to continue to get the grant without having to come through. So on the disability grant, what we are finding is that the challenge that we have, much as the resumption in the different regions, they've started servicing this, because we already have a backlog in terms of the people that had not been serviced before. The numbers are huge, but we've agreed across the board that all staff need to come back, even though we continue to have challenges in offices that are small. But the escalation of the COVID-19 infections and deaths within our environment has actually continued to have impact on constraints on us in terms of the local offices, particularly in areas where the offices are very small, to make sure that we continue to provide a service. We are engaging consistently with labor to make sure that we do what it is that we need to do to make sure that people can access what they have a constitutional right to. The assessment sites in terms of healthcare centers have not been available, but what we've done is we've constantly engaged with the Department of Health to make sure that we continue to get support, not only particularly in those areas where we find that people actually have to go to health facilities. We've been engaging not only at provincial level, but also at national level with the DG to make sure that we can collectively look at different ways of how we can actually provide support in terms of people with disabilities. I indicated that we continue to have issues with labor in terms of concern for them, as we've seen on TV, particularly with regards to Nihau, that they've been putting a lot of pressure in terms of the fact that we need to make sure that all the support that is required is actually dealt with. So we are beginning to manage those, and we're happy that now with the Metro, particularly in Western Cape, that we are able to resume the support that has made a huge difference. But we continue to manage this and address, engage all the different stakeholders, especially the NGOs that work with persons with disabilities. DG, I think you will take on from in terms of how to manage the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO. Chairperson, we are about to conclude, but we thought that we should highlight very important lessons and recommendations for the future. These are really just the high-level ones, and we have a number of others that we could speak to. But let me just speak to about four very quickly. The first one is around, of course, the fact that COVID has exposed seriously high levels of structural inequality and poverty in the country. And our view is that much more needs to be done in terms of providing social relief and social support. We've done a fantastic job as the portfolio. And it's important that I highlight that even in the midst of some difficulties, we're able to get food to citizens. We're able to save lives. We're able to have a positive impact on the lives and improving the quality of lives of millions of South Africans. But we do think that much more can be done, particularly in the way in which we rolled out that work out. I also wanted to highlight that one of the key things that the AG raised, before I go there, there's an element I omitted to highlight from the CEO's input, just on the issue of the continuation of the COVID-19 grant. I think what we want to say is that we were given a very specific allocation, which actually runs out in October. That is what was committed. That is what was communicated. And this is what we are delivering on, is against the specific allocation which runs out in October. I just wanted to highlight that point before I jump back to this element. We've noted that the AG has raised very critical areas around the fact that we're not sharing data amongst government departments and institutions. And this has led to a lot of leakage in the system. We want to say that what we've managed to do is to stop all those accounts, and I think it's just over 35,000 of them, if I'm not mistaken, which stopped the payment of those accounts that the AG has raised as red flags. We're working very well with the AG in this regard, and the AG understands the kind of pressure we were under as a portfolio in order to deliver the work that we had to. But we are beginning also to engage, thank you, very much with DPME and other government institutions. And as the CEO has indicated, we're doing well in terms of aligning our data sets much better now. And I think that's something that's helping us. It assists us in reducing the duplication in some areas, double dipping in areas, and of course, fraud and corruption. We've also shifted into providing food vouchers. And I gave an example of how that is beginning to work at SASE in particular. And we're looking at utilizing this hybrid model accordingly. I think we still need to strengthen our coordination, particularly amongst the DSD and SASE, because in some cases we're distributing food and the provinces, where our distribution networks are clashing in some areas. And I think we need to find a way of cleaning that up. And we're beginning to work on some of those areas. Maybe quickly the next issue, the servicing of social grants. We have been doing social grants manually, and we've had some challenges around that. But I think one of the things that assisted us is that we've launched, actually it was a trial run that we did an online application process for some of the grants. We trialed it last month. We had some challenges with it, and we deliberately just wanted to see the influx, and it was extremely crowded. And we are trying to work on some of those challenges so that we have a proper launch of the system so that we're able to address those technical challenges. And that removes the face-to-face contact and encourages this element of online applications. But that's not to say that we will stop the face-to-face applications. We're not going to do that. We're going to use a hybrid model in order to address that. I think the other important issue is that we've now staggered grants. You'll note that majority of our grants are being paid over a number of days, and no longer on the first day of the month. And I think that's assisted us greatly in that we're managing to reduce the congestion. We're also allowing for more money to flow in the system. But we're also assisting retailers by ensuring that their measures that they're able to put in place, and they're able to project and plan accordingly in that regard. And I think this is an important thing, but we do continue to encourage members of the public to not necessarily collect their money as soon as they get the SMS that it's available in their account, but that they should give some time in order to collect their money. And again, the critical thing I need to highlight here is that you would find very long lines at post offices, etc. We've continuously tried to communicate to recipients that they have options of where to collect their money. They can collect them at the post office, they can collect them at retail stores, and they can collect them at banks. So we've opened up the opportunities, the options for people to be able to collect money so that we try and reduce congestion in one specific area. And I think we're really trying. There are some challenges that we're still experiencing, but we're trying to deal with those. Maybe just the last one. I won't speak to this one because I've spoken to it, but I'll deal with it later. I've spoken to Kuseleka Centers, and I'm just saying that we've already identified buildings in some provinces, and we're already starting to work in some areas to reprioritize budgets, in some areas to mobilize budgets, and we are engaging with provinces accordingly in that regard. I think the one critical thing I want to highlight, is that you would note that some NPOs, particularly ECDs, had some challenges in terms of providing relevant information and so on and so forth. So we want to reduce the administrative burden. And one of the biggest challenges we had is that we don't necessarily have accurate data around ECD practitioners and ECDs. In fact, you have in excess of over 35,000 ECDs which are unregistered, which means that we have no sense of where they are in the country. And of course, you'd recall that we launched the Bangasali program to address that challenge so that we're able to locate. How many people do we have registered through Bangasali? How many ECDs? More than 50,000. I'm told that we've registered just over 50,000 or not necessarily registered, but the first step, which is them saying that, look, we're ECDs, this is where we are. Around 50,000, if I'm not mistaken, that we've now, we're bringing to the fore and beginning to try and ensure that we have the data so that we're able to support them much better. And this is the crux We can't support where we don't know where they are. We need the information so that we're able to provide the relevant support. Lastly, I just wanted to highlight two things. One, the issues of behavioral change. Again, we still have some serious challenges around alcohol abuse, serious challenges around gender-based violence and femicide, and in particular, the killing of women and the killing of children. And sometimes we tend to dilute it and crowd this up in gender-based violence. And sometimes we need to be frank and call a spade. It's the killing of women and the killing of children. And these are serious issues that we need to address and deal with. So we continue in terms of our work by enhancing our social behavioral change programs and interventions, and we increase our education and awareness programs and strong towards creating a very strong value system in society, particularly working with all sectors of society. This is things; these are elements that we think must be driven from a family level to community and societal levels. Maybe the last thing, which I think for me is a very critical thing, Chairperson, I promise it really is the last. You know, we've realized that we have a number of shortages of staff, particularly to deal with our call centers, etc. And we have a limited number of people to deal with social development related matters on the whole. What we've decided to do, and we've piloted this and it's working extremely well, we now have a call center at SASA, which is a bot-enabled technology. So you don't have physical people sitting there in the call center. We have a bot that works to be able to take in all calls. And as a result, we have over 50,000 calls that we've received that have never been dropped in the past few weeks. Not a single call gets dropped. Every call is answered and responded to. And I can tell you that this is technology that we want to build into a concept that we started thinking about and we're starting to work on, which is the concept of shared services. We believe that we should have a dedicated call center for the entire portfolio that is zero rated, so members of the public would be able to call in for free and be able to access any level of support throughout the entire portfolio, whether it be grant support, whether it be issues around gender-based violence, whether it be issues around femicide, whether it be issues around children, etc. We want to have a bot-enabled technology call center that would be able to assist us in addressing every single challenge that members of the public have. We want to extend these shared services, not just to the call center, but also to the work that we're doing around legal services, to the work that we're doing around corporate services on the whole, and the websites, etc. We think that if we do this, we'll save a lot of money as a portfolio, but we'll be able to integrate in the true sense of having a portfolio, that work, and most importantly, working towards a digital transformation strategy for the entire portfolio. Let me leave it at that, Chairperson, without having been tempted to go into some of the other areas that we've done. But these are just the high-level areas that we thought that we should share with this august committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, ADG. Thank you for this in-depth presentation. I just want to accept that it's quite a long presentation, but however, that is the load you had for us, and I dare say we asked for it. It's okay. Honorable members, there's a lot of work that has been put together here. My attitude is that maybe we may not discuss it fully today, but we can say whatever we want to say today. There may be a need to further engage the document, but for now, we've got the entire information before us, and the document was with us by Monday. Honorable members, I have members who are ready to engage. Honorable Masango, Honorable Aris, Honorable Dikhang, Honorable Delisile, Honorable Nganye, Honorable Abrams, Honorable Fanameva, Honorable Mambana, Honorable Anastasia closes the list. Honorable Masango?
My apologies, Chair.
I don't need your apologies. Put your name in the chat.
It is disabled on my side, Chair. I've notified the Secretary.
All right. We'll take note of that, Honorable Seger. Honorable Masango.
Thank you, Chair. I just would like to thank the department and the entities for having come through to present this morning. And before I ask my questions, I just would like to really send a word of condolences to the families of the staff of the department that we were informed had lost their lives in the line of duty due to COVID-19, and just say that, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with the families, as it were. And also just to appreciate the programs that the department has put in place in terms of wellness for the staff, because as the ADG was saying, the services that we demand are provided to the millions of people who are receiving services from the department are actually provided by the staff. So we need that the staff to be healthy, to be safe, and all those things for them to be able to provide those services. So I would like to really appreciate that from the ADG. Chair, my questions are, as you said earlier, the presentation was comprehensive, and there is a lot of issues that come up as the presentations are being made. But I will limit my questions to the following. I really am excited to hear the ADG saying that there's a brand spanking new call center initiative that is here, because as one receives their queries on a daily basis, the complaint that comes through before you are told what the query is that I've tried the emails, I've tried the call center, I've tried, and I've not been responded to. So if this program or the system that the ADG is referring to is going to take care of that, it's going to relieve the channel that we are using, that the department has made available to us, like the ADG himself and the DDGs that we hound on a daily basis with queries, if the people can actually get a hold of the department through the channels that have been set up. So I really appreciate that, and I'm excited because I've been like a broken record on this issue. And I want to thank the department, not only the department, but SASSA as well, who are so responsive to our queries that we channel through to them, and they respond as in cases within an hour or even within 30 minutes, you know, where you get an email back from the ADG or the DDGs and SASSA, and get these people who are so desperate, you know, helped in terms of what they are complaining about. So I would like to know, Chairperson, what is the plan given the deepening of the social ills that have been brought about as a result of the COVID-19, in terms of, for example, there was a presentation, there was a slide that spoke to Kuseleka centers, and when you try to link that to the 30 hotspots that the Minister of Police presented, and you hear that in places like KZN, where you have most, if not you have most of these hotspots, and yet the discussions are ongoing. So I just would like to know if we are at a later stage going to receive a plan that is looking at specifically post-COVID, because there has been a deepening of social ills. The food insecurity has deepened. The need for psychosocial support in many of the department's own sectors of society, there will need to be, I believe, a focused and a plan on how this is going to be dealt with, because those things actually speak to budgets as well. And one is also very happy to hear about the CNDCs being open, and to find out whether the opening of the CNDCs has also corresponded to the increased numbers of the people that actually need to be visiting these CNDCs as a result. I am just wanting also to find out from the department if the data harvesting that the minister referred to say there was a partnership that was being formed with a private sector company that is helping with the database and things like that, as to how far that is. And Chairperson, there has been seriously conflicting messages in the social media about the clearing of the names, or the I don't know what to say, the screening of the ID numbers for the receiving of the 350 SRD grant, where the department would say no, you go and to SARS and submit your returns, and then but also you must appeal. And so there's just been so many conflicts, and some people don't even know what I'm talking about when I say their RP5 has been the reason why they cannot be approved. So I just would like some clarity on that. And then also, I would like to know, while I'm speaking about the SRD grant, can the people receive the 350 SRD grant from retailers at all? And then the food situation, Chair, is my last question. The people that are awaiting the grant, who have applied for grants, and they are destitute, they are hungry, they have no food. Is SASSA doing anything to sort of, in the meantime, like they used to do, in the meantime, have those people receive vouchers, now that there are vouchers being piloted, vouchers or food parcels and things like that? Because one has many people that one has had to go and give these people food, because they're just saying, I'm waiting. I don't know if when that money comes, I will still be allowed, because I'm literally hungry with my disabled wife, disabled child, whatever. So I would like to know if there's any situation where this is being taken care of. Otherwise, thank you so much, Chair, and thank you to the department.
I am deliberately allowing members to speak because of the length of the report, but I would request members not to abuse that. Honorable Eris, you will speak after Honorable Mtaung. There's a special request that has been made before me, if you don't mind.
No problem, Chair.
Honorable Mtaung.
Thank you, Chair. Let me take this opportunity to thank the department and its entities for the presentation given to us. My question, comrades, Chairperson, will be on the update on progress made.
To you, they are comrades. You must not be apologetic.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Chair.
Bye, sir.
Proceed.
Yeah. So, comrade, Chairperson, mine will be on the update on progress made to respond to COVID-19 pandemic issues. Noting the financial reality of expanding the 350 SRD on the economy and the need to provide support to those that are unemployed. Has there been thought and engagement on the future of providing such financial support after this month? On the establishment of shelters and Kuseleka one-stop center, noting the reprioritization of funding and the constraints of the budget, how and from where will this additional resources be mobilized? What progress is being made in the development of the e-voucher system, and how and where will it be functioning? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Arias.
Yeah, morning, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you for your understanding.
No problem. Nothing is a problem unless we make it a problem. Chair, I just want to check. I've seen on slide 7, they have indicated that some of the offices was closed But then I cannot help it to see that within the Western Cape, there was no offices closed during this COVID-19 time. And I mean, when you look at it, that Western Cape hotspot, it is just, a concern. And then in terms of the CNDCs that will open again, Chairperson, I think that we really need an urgent to the CNDCs, specifically with seating and the conditions. It is not conducive in some of these CNDCs for people to go and collect food there. So I think that we need to do oversight visits to the CNDC sector. And then, Chair, in terms of the GBV assistance, because, Chair, last night I was in Ganesa in Northwest, and there's an MPO that are really struggling. They are serving about 10 areas, and they are struggling with funding. So I want to find out from, since they say they are Koleka centers in specifically Vryburg, what assistance did they give to these NPOs that are really helping us to fight this pandemic of GBV? And then, Chair, I also would like to find out from the department, what is the plan to, because we have seen recently in the news that the ECD did take the Department of Social Services to court. So I want to find out from the department what assistance more can they give to the ECD. Then, we know that the 350 SRD grant will be extended to December. But bear in mind that plus minus more than 4 million people has been added to the unemployment in the country. I would like to find out from the department, what is their plan to accommodate that people within the SASSA program? And then in terms of the current situation with the post office, as we are aware and we have seen it in the media, how will this situation, financial situation of the post office, influence our people that receiving the grants from the post office? Because we find many of times people queuing the whole day for this grant only to find out that there's no money at the post office, and then people must return empty-handed. And then also to SASSA, I would like to find out that in KZN about last week, there was somebody again been found in possession of 495 SASSA cards. I want to find out from SASSA, because right now what they say is that they are utilizing these SASSA cards and then e-wallet it to some code number. What is the plan of SASSA to secure that, to get a more secure system? Because right now even these money lenders, they have access, because it's a debit card, they can put a debit and then that money automatically going off. Is there any way that SASSA, or is SASSA working on an alternative way to curb these type of things? Then in terms of the safety houses grant, Chairperson, I would like to speak on this one, because the safety houses, these people that, these kids that are putting in this safety houses, the grant is for quite a while, so that 970 rent. What is the plan of SASSA? And then also, Chair, in terms of, yes, we have a shortage of social workers, but when you look at the salaries that the social workers are earning, specifically in your RTF, VFS and things like that, it is pathetic. And I really want the department to look into that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. All I will stop. Thank you, Honourable Aris.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also start to appreciate the comprehensive presentation which was presented to us by the department. It's quite informative, so I think it's important for us to, from our side, to appreciate the kind of work that is happening. Honorable Chair, I think I've got three or four issues that I want to raise, but it's actually straightforward questions that I want to pose to the department. And then the first one is that I would like to find out from the department what has been the outcomes on the engagements with the National Treasury in addressing the food insecurity challenges which have been exacerbated by COVID-19. And then also I would like to find out what has been the thought process around the reviewing of the food distribution system, which has posed a number of challenges throughout the country. There was a proposal of the voucher, standardizing the food distribution, the food parcels and all of that to avoid confusion. So I would just like to find out what is happening in that regard. And then also I would like to find out again, what systems are in place to ensure that the backlogs are addressed and what are the main timeframes to address these backlogs that are currently happening in relation to the distribution of food parcels, issuing of the grant, 350 grant and all of that. So in relation to the backlogs, what is the department doing to address the backlog? And then my last point, Honorable Chairperson, I would like to find out, noting that the ECD centers continue to be open for now, how is the department addressing the issue that have been raised by the workers in the ECD sector? We have taken the department to court, pleading for better state support. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Those are my issues. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Stop. Mhlake.
Honorable Mhlake is here. Enkosi kakhulu, Chair, for the chance, and greetings to everyone, and thank you to the department for a very detailed report. Chair, firstly, I would like to also echo the sentiments of the Honorable Masango, in sending condolences to the 33 families who have lost their loved ones on the line of duty. May Utikwabinabo help them heal in this process. Chairperson, unfortunately, Minister Aga Kobendiz of Vuelukuti, we find out the progress on the basic income grant discussions. Uba says the Hamba P, how far are they and what are the developments? So if ADG is able to answer that for me, I will appreciate it. Chairperson, slide 11, the interventions, the alcohol abuse. I'd like to thank the department for looking into that, because alcohol is the most driving factor in terms of all these social ills, including, most importantly, gender-based violence. So we welcome the interventions and hoping that they will be followed up and make sure that they're all implemented, because we are in the process of losing moral fiber and our values in our communities due to alcohol abuse. So we welcome the interventions and we support them, all of them, Chairperson. They truly make sense, and I believe that they will bring change in our communities. My other concern, Chair, is the issue of the fraud cases around ISASA, where money has been stolen, as Honorable Leticia Harris has alluded to. I wanted to find out, Chair, if it is possible, if I'm not mistaken, beginning of last year, I think, Minister appointed a fraud unit manager, I think. Is it possible that in one of the meetings, if he can be available, and just take us through what is happening with these fraud cases and money stolen, the SASA and all those things, and if there's anything that can be done to remedy the situation, because a whole lot of money is lost within the department because of these monies that are stolen, especially within SASA. The Ministerial Advisory Committee on Social Behavior Changes, it is a good initiative. It is welcomed. I just wanted to find out that would it not help maybe to include the Minister of Police as well to be part of this committee, so that they work together with in connection with the issues that relate to social ills and abuse of alcohol and all those things, so that he can also, his department, be part of the awareness programs and that are taking part. there is a mention of socially vulnerable persons that would be part of the advisory committee of this ministerial advisory committee. I just wanted to know that, does this include women and children, and does it include GBV? Will that be also be a part of where they would concentrate? In slide 10, with the issue of food security, Chairperson, I just want to know how many vouchers have been distributed so far? If we can have just a number, an indication, and just a clarity on the confusion, because some people are not even aware that vouchers have already been given out. Where can they find these vouchers? What is the process? How can people get these vouchers? Slide 13 on the Kuseleka one-stop, Chairperson. I believe that as OADG says, that they are not in a position to gloat yet about the number of shelters. I believe that there aren't enough shelters yet. Although I share in his vision of seeing shelters being closed because of the reduction or elimination of GBV, but we are not there yet. So it is important that we increase the Kuseleka one-stop centers in every province, in all 9 provinces of them. So we welcome and we commend what they're trying to do in making sure that we have these one-stop centers, and we welcome all these services that are provided in these one-stop shelters. I believe they will bring a change. Going to SASSA, Chesendi Gqeba, firstly, I would like to thank SASSA Kakhulu with the interventions when we call as MPs asking for them to intervene, especially with the 350 grants. Most especially Diane Duncanley, the executive manager, she's been very, very helpful, responds immediately, and a whole lot of people have received assistance from her office. So we really are grateful for that. I just want to know, Chair, that with the 60,000 of requests to reconsider in terms of the 350, how many have been taken through the process, and how long do they envisage this process to go through, and how many in the 60,000 have received a positive outcome in terms of the reconsideration, and how many doctors, because I see in slide 22 that there are doctors who have withdrawn from their SASSA contracts, how many doctors have withdrawn, and what are the remedial actions towards that? Enkosi kakhulu, Chair.
Siyabulela emhlakeni. Honorable Manganye.
Eh, abshieni Holobye.
Eh.
Eh. Ke dumedise di-member tsa parlamente le department tsa rona le di-entity tsa teng. Le nna ke le maswabi ke bua ke shebi ke lebile batho ba ba re tlogetseng e leng staff sa rona. Kana ke masole a setseng mo ntweng a ne a lwela rona, batho ba rona ka kakaretso, batlhoki ba ba wa matshelo a bona dependile mo SASSA le mo social development. Ka moo ke re amiwa ya bona e robale ka kagiso. Ke lebogele gape tiro e manontlhotlho e department ya rona ya social development le SASSA le NDA ba lekileng go e tlhalosa ka boripana le ga document ya bona e batla gore e ba le matsatsi a mararo. Mara ba lekile ka thata gore ba tlhalose ka matsetseleko a feteletseng, ra e lebogela ka moo. Mme go sa re ga ke na ditshwaelonyana, ke na le ditshwaelo yaka ke setse ke lebogetse tiro e le e dirang e botlhokwa. Ke na le ditshwaelonyana tse ke lekang go kopa thuso gore a le ka se di rarabolole go fetanyana. I understand you have been SASSA social development and you have been engaging with SAPO. I thought your engagement, when you engage with them, it did bear some improvement in terms of service rendered to our beneficiaries, to make sure that SAPO and beneficiaries optimally adhere to the COVID health and safety protocol. But when I listen to the CEO of SASA, it seems you have just not make it for making sure that SAPO is adhering to what other entities are doing. Because really, you go to this post office, you will ask yourself, is this, are we still in COVID or COVID is over? So I just wanted to ask you, has been there an assessment or engagement with SAPO on how its financially challenges will impact the disbursement of grants to our beneficiary? Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Abrams.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Manganye. Kati tshwaelo le go rabolla. Proceed. Honorable Abrams.
Morning, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues in the department and SASA and NDA. Thank you for the presentation. I don't really want to repeat what has been said before, but maybe just to add on to some of the topics that my colleagues have mentioned before. I mean, the acting DG spoke about, you know, what is it about alcohol? And I, for one, believe that one of the many reasons is that alcohol and, you know, in the same way drugs, it's a form of an escape for people. It's a form to numb the pain that they've lost their job and so forth. And we definitely do need to take extra measures to curb the abuse of alcohol. So my question would be, is the department leading the way, or is there a transversal work group with other departments such as DTI to discuss the issues of alcohol abuse and ways to curb alcohol abuse? Because also, as we know, that there is a value chain when it comes to the sale of alcohol, how it affects the restaurant industry, etc. So is there a transversal work group that the department is maybe leading or part of to address the abuse of alcohol? Then on the issue of the Kusileka Center, and I will forward the acting DG a report that one of my colleagues did on the 6th of September when they visited Freyberg's Kusileka Center. And I mean, if we're going to spend 20 million approximately on these centers, we need it to be functional. And on the 6th of September, they found that center in particular to not have functional CCTV facilities, to not have empowered.
Which center, Honorable Abrams?
So this is in the northwest, the Kusileka One Stop Center in Freyberg. So they found that center to not have empowerment programs to upskill the women, that when they leave after that 6 months, that they don't go back into that same abusive home because they have no other alternative. And as you know, sometimes the children come with, and they found that there were no educational programs for the children, seeing that they are out of school for the 6 months. So, you know, if we're going to be spending the millions on these centers, we need to make sure the ones that we do have are actually functional and servicing our communities. Then also, Chairperson, this committee and various members in this committee has repeatedly asked for a list of the NGOs, the CSOs, who have been recipients of the CARA grant. And I've gone through my emails, and we still to date have not received a list of those organizations. And I saw on the NDA's Facebook page, they handed over some money to NGOs in KZN, and it would just be very helpful that when we get a call from someone in KZN, we can refer those individuals to the CSOs who are actually receiving state funding. And then on that topic, Chairperson, and I would like to know if the department has perhaps seen the report from the Department of Police in how they identified the top 30 hotspots. Because as my colleagues mentioned earlier, 8 of these hotspots are found in the Western Cape and Gauteng, 7 are found in KZN. But then when I look at the allocation of funds, you know, KZN only received 7 million, while a province like Limpopo, who's not mentioned in the top 30, is receiving 16 million. So to explain where the, once again, transversal intergovernmental coordination and communication, that we aren't working in silos, is coming in when we are trying to battle gender-based violence. Are the departments talking to each other when we are assigning resources? Then also on the topic of emerging CSOs, I just want to confirm, do these emerging CSOs, are they registered? Do they have MPO numbers? And then to jump back to the top 30 hotspots and that report from SAPS on how they identified it, I, for one, would like to know who is number 31 on that list, which municipality? Which municipality is number 32 on that list? Because those are also equally important as the top 50, so that they don't get into the top 50, number 31, 32, 33, and so on. Then also touching on the basic income grant chairperson, and perhaps we need a presentation on it, because many of us have been reading about how much it's going to projectedly cost in the media. And the Business Tech this morning also reported on that the president will be making an announcement or including it in his speech tomorrow. So, you know, we're hearing all this information from media houses, but not from the department themselves. And if we could maybe just get a time in our calendar where we can, you know, look at that. And then lastly, on the issue of SASSA and the disability and care dependency grants. And, you know, I'm sure everybody is very happy and pleased that it will be extended till December and that the medical assessment reports are also now valid for additional 3 months.
What happens?
In a number of our government portfolios, if that's not addressed, then the backlog is not going to be attended to. And when I looked at the organograms of SASSA, and to point out that not a single one of our regional offices have a senior manager in the disability unit, it's very concerning for me. Then further to look at our annual report and to see that the vacancy rate in 2017 and 2018 was 53%, and just last year it increased to 55%. I want to ask SASSA to address the challenges we have. Is addressing the capacity of SASSA not a priority, and should that not be made you know, a priority going forward? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Abrams. Honorable from the Mayor.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to thank the ADG for his report, and in particular thank everyone from DSD, NDA, SASSA, everyone who's done amazing work during these trying times. I would like to also add my voice to the sentiments raised in terms of conveying condolences to some of the frontline staff who have lost their lives. I would also like to in particular thank the ADG for the special focus that he had placed today on the issues of gender-based violence. I think it's something that we often complain about, that there's not a lot of focus from the department on issues of gender-based violence. And I think he really spoke to some of the interventions today. And I really hope that our intentions become actions going forward. Chairperson, I'm also glad that the CEO of SASSA spoke to the findings raised by the Auditor General, because I was going to ask her about it, and she spoke to some of the interim interventions that they've put in place. But I think it's really disheartening, Chairperson, that we only realized that we were paying some wrong people when the AG raised it, and more so the AG raised the issue of that we were paying government employees. So I would like to ask the CEO, she did mention that they've tracked down some of these people who've received payments erroneously. But I want to specifically ask, in terms of the government employees who are collecting the 350 Rand grant, have you tracked all of these government employees? How many are they? And I would really like to appeal, Chairperson, that we are kept abreast on a weekly basis, or whenever we meet with the department, or whenever possible, that we're kept abreast of the report that she says they've collected and that they're handing over to authorities, because I think we need to really keep making sure that people who steal from the poor are held accountable. I think there's really a very special place in hell for people who steal from the poor. So we need to make sure that we follow this to the conclusion. We want to make sure that everyone who has been collecting these grants fraudulently are held to account. Chairperson, I would like to say also, it says in on the slides, it says directions, when it speaks to appeals, reviews and rejections. It says that directions were only signed on 7 October, which provides for reconsiderations to be undertaken, and that we were waiting for an updated data set to be provided to us by the 12th of October from the UIF system. So were these received? And I would like to ask why only now, because we've been asking about the appeals process and the review process since we last saw each other in August. And I think we can just imagine you were rejected from this grant in April or May already, and you're still waiting to be reviewed. So I just wanted to get clarity. Are we only starting the review process now that we've received the updated sets from the UIF? And really, why so late? It's really concerning. I would like to get an update on the status of payment to NGOs in the Eastern Cape. It is something that we raised last time. Have all those NGOs who were still waiting for payments, have they received their payments? I see that there was a scathing court judgment against the Department of Social Development in the Eastern Cape with regard to the non-payment of old age homes, and I think that is very discouraging. On slide 9, we speak about the electronic monitoring system that will track food distribution to avoid double dipping going forward. I would like to ask again, who is developing this tool? How will it work, and by when will this be in place, the timeframes? For example, how will you be picking up that a family has already received food from an NGO or a church, as an example? So I just want to get more indication on how that will work. On slide 13, we speak about shelters, and I think, like the Honourable Ngwenya said, we all share the vision of wanting to see shelters in every district in our country. But ADG, the National Shelter Movement, published an open letter to you and other stakeholders, and they were addressing once again the underfunding of shelters. And I would like to know whether you've responded to them or engaged with them. On the issue of substance abuse, I want to remind the department that we asked previously when we were engaging on the issues of substance abuse that we would like to see the data in terms of how many people, how many beds do we have available for treatment, and how many people are seeking treatment, so that we can compare those. Because often in our constituencies, we hear the complaint from people that they are saying that they cannot access these services. So we need to get an understanding whether these programs are actually working. Do we have enough treatment centers, enough beds, and where are those available so that we can direct people to them? Then on the lessons learned, I think we must commend the department for their frank assessment on some of the challenges and the lessons learned. I do note, for example, that the ADG in one of the slides speak to the fact that they've realized that many people were not able to access the online application system for their SRD grant because they didn't have access to data, cell phones or the internet. And I think that is something that the committee flagged with them right at the start. And again, I would just like to appeal that, you know, we're a family, we work together. So when we raise these issues, these are real issues that our constituencies are experiencing and having problems with, and we need to address them when they arise and not after the fact. Then lastly, I think I would also like to just get an indication once more. When we say we're exploring and piloting the food distribution hybrid model, which will include food parcels, vouchers, and a grant. Now, we are already saying that we have challenges because we can't send e-wallets or vouchers to people on their cell phones because of RICA concerns. So the phone number is not RICA, so the ID number and the phone number don't match. So how do we envisage dealing with that concern, for example? And then I would like to know, we also spoke in our previous meeting about the universal DSD number. And I think, like the Honourable Masango said, we really welcome and appreciate that because many people were saying that they tried so many different call center numbers and they were not able to reach the department in SASSA during this difficult time. So I would also like to get from the ADG, do you have any thinking around the time frames for when you would like to see this universal free toll-free number being up and running? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Akbar Britt.
Dankie, voorzitter. Thank you so much, Chairperson. I would like to reiterate what my colleagues have said.
I think a lot of work has gone into the very clear cut and harsh assessment that the department and its entities made upon itself, and I want to thank them for that. I think it has been good. It has been good work, especially regarding all the challenges they have faced. I think that they had quite a hefty list of things they had to do that was thrust upon them during this pandemic. And I would really like to thank their honesty with this portfolio committee. In that also being said, Chairperson, I would not like to repeat what my colleagues have said. I think they were quite thorough in terms of that, but I would like to support Honourable Abrams to say that we've also been receiving a lot of inquiries regarding the basic income grant and how that would work and what is envisioned. So I would support that we interact with that. And also, Chairperson, and I think it was in the AG's report, and the colleagues have mentioned that in terms of SASSA payments that have been made to staff, the 290 million rand that has gone missing, and that I really would like to see that we actually have proper consequence management, that the wrong people are brought to book. And I would like to agree with Honourable Van der Merwe that I believe there's a special place in hell for people who steal from the poor. I would also like to extend her scope with regard to the payments of NGOs. I've also been having here and there a number of problems that the MECs fortunately were able to sort out with legislature members. And so maybe if we can have a breakdown and or just a list of the payments that have been made throughout the country, not just specifically in the Eastern Cape. I would like to make specific mention, and I'm just waiting for all my necessary information, but maybe for the department to take note. I have been informed of some drug houses, or smokkelhuise, as they call it in Afrikaans, of the people who are actually using their SASSA cards to buy drugs, and then these drug dealers actually take their SASSA cards and are using the grants on their behalf. So I'm just waiting for all of those details, and I would actually speak to the ADG to that, because I think that is also specifically taking into account the responsibility of Department of Social Development to look into substance abuse. I think that is a matter that we can raise and we can follow up successfully. But my two main questions, Chairperson, would be with regard would be to SASSA, with regard to the 350 rand SRD grant. Just for clarity's sake, and the CEO mentioned 60,000 appeals that would automatically then be paid out. Is that what I understand, or is that correct? That, and I think Honourable Van der Merwe might have mentioned that in terms of the appeals process, how far are we? And just specifically speaking to that 60,000 that the CEO mentioned, would those then be the appeals that will automatically be paid to these people, automatically be available at the post offices for them? I was just a bit confused in terms of that regard. And I've also had complaints of people who were paid in May, received that SMS from SASSA that they had to go to the post office. They have been approved for June, July, August, you know, and the rest of the month. They have not received a further SMS to tell them when they can go. And when they actually go to the post office is quite rude and says, no, they don't have money. They don't have money for them. They can't assist them, even if they are approved. So in terms of that, is there a way that these SRD grant holders can highlight that, or what should they do? Chairperson, and I think I have been covered by the rest of my colleagues. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honourable Brad. I think members who wanted to speak all have spoken, Honourable members.
Honourable,
I just wanted to say maybe one needs to acknowledge the fact that there has been quite a number of positives from the committee towards the department about the work. And that must actually encourage you,
Honourable Chair,
to actually intensify improvement of areas where the committee is worried. The fact that the committee is able to acknowledge the positive things that the department is doing, especially the stop centre with regard to the response time, SASA's response, quick response on calls and so on. The resolution, the time taken to resolve issue raised and so on. I mean, that is going to be the response and clarification of issues towards those who are affected and those who are also speaking on behalf of those who are affected is going to be a defining feature in terms of whether indeed the department is actually adapting to the challenges that it is seeking to address. And I think there has been a call, ADG, that we need to, in a conscious way, do a post-COVID analysis in a scientific manner to check in a more structured way what has been revealed by COVID to us and how are we adapting in a more full, comprehensive manner. Of course, the point that people must be educated about a number of issues that are affecting their lives, in particular those who are beneficiaries. I think the issue of 350, we don't know what the president is going to say on Sunday, on Thursday, but all I know is that generally there is an agreement in this country that a lot of things should be done to ensure that no people fall outside the net. And there are various ways of doing that. And even the issue of basic income grant, it seems to be generally agreeable. But what is key is its implementability. At the end of the day, all the things we want, we must have the capacity to deliver on them. So those are some of the things I understand are being looked at. The oversight, Honorable Aris, on CNTC, I'm attracted to that one. There is also an issue, department, about the use of SASA cards. If there's a room for improving security,
yeah, and again,
that's a very important point. There's also a call for the fraud unit to come and actually share with us what is it that they can expose us to regarding the work they are doing. Honorable members will remember there was an organization here that came to make a presentation on the issue of alcohol. Maybe it's a matter that we need to go back to and check now that are we in a position to engage with it. The issue of shelters, as articulated by the AGD, I think I understand him to be saying, whilst there's a deficit in ensuring that those shelters are available, they are not a good indication of the state of health in the country, which means the underlying challenges is where most of our time should be spent, whether it's in the economy, social infrastructure, and various types of infrastructure, and the entire social economic infrastructure, be it housing, water, and so on. And the list of the CSOs that are receiving funding from the state, and the issue of double dipping, ADG. Remember, AG spoke about that, in particular with the unintegrated system. It will be important to actually relieve the anxiety of the community in as far as this one is concerned. Lastly, if you check, honorable members, I'm just repeating. No, my apology. Yo.
Even myself.
There was one person to be noted. It was Honorable Seike. Is there any other member now who wants to speak?
No.
I did not have that Honorable Van.
Yo.
I spoke
sorry,
about...
Chair.
Yeah?
Can I assist?
And Honorable Mvana noted that she's experienced some technical glitches. She's been trying to come in and out, but she noted to speak.
That was between yourself and Honorable Mvana.
But Honorable Honorable Sege.
No. When you raise your hand, Mvana, I must see it here. I can't see it where you are. So, all right. It's resolved. It's no big deal. Honorable Sekar and Honorable Mvana.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. I firstly want to join my colleagues in thanking the department for the presentation. And secondly, I also want to convey my deepest condolences to the families and to the department on the very critical people that they have lost. One life is one life too many. I'm not going to repeat what my colleagues have said in depth. I'm going to just make a few comments that I believe is important to add. The one is the issue around alcohol abuse is due to the lack of psychosocial support and health services to treat psychiatric disorders and psychological support to poor families or to poorer communities. The health services in our areas are extremely poor, Chair. And it is an issue that we need to raise because a lot of the reasons behind substance abuse, whether it be drugs and alcohol, is actually founded in the trauma that our people are experiencing, as well as other undiagnosed mental illnesses that are not being treated. And it is a major issue that has escalated, especially under the lockdown. It gives us a red flag when you see that the day that the ban on alcohol was lifted. We made memes, people made memes about it, joked about it, but it is not that people do it recreationally only. It's also that people do it to numb pain. And I know that the DSD, because of their background as well, understands that. And it is a gap that we must close. Currently, over the last couple of months, what we are seeing is more and more people suffering emotionally and psychologically because of lockdown. We are sitting with I went to do oversight at school over this period, and it is heart-rending to see the condition that teachers or the state of teachers and principals. So we need to work and we need to ask the department that there be some interdepartmental facilitation, coordination, I do not know, but interventions to scale up our support in terms of psychological and psycho support. It is not enough. Then in terms of GBV, I thank the department for the passion in which the DG has given us a brief on that. But I want to go back to the whole thing around the prevention of GBV, which is strengthening support to vulnerable families. And it ties into the first comment that I made. Housing support, lack of housing is a major contributor to vulnerable women and children. And consulting with provinces to prioritize housing to single-headed households, especially women, because the vulnerability of women and children is the big reason why people need to stay. We can't just look at the short-term support. We need to look at sustainable interventions to support families to stay home and for the breakdown of families to be addressed in a holistic manner. I want to highlight that. I also want to ask that the department please respond to what the committee has asked before. We asked for the list. The chairperson has now highlighted it. So did Honorable Alexander. We asked also for the department to provide us with other information that I have requested the secretary to please resubmit to the department. If the department can please respond to what the committee has asked before. The 350 Rand grant is not sustainable in the long term for South Africa, and we know the president is going to speak about this. This points again to the capacity of the department. The department, we know, cannot do this alone, and this committee has over and over said that. I want to re-emphasize the need for coordination and facilitation to address social challenges. And this goes back to the very issues that causes, in the first place, for people to be state dependent. For instance, the whole issue around maintenance support to women and the fact that children do not get maintenance is lapsing, and economic vulnerability of women is exasperated. I want to bring this again to the attention of the department to say there must be an advocacy, coordination, facilitation role that should form part of the response when it comes to gender-based violence. And then lastly, in terms of food security, currently we cannot service everybody with food parcels. It's impossible. We need the department, however, to become part of the community response where we are saying, and a lot of NGOs and churches are doing it, where land is being made available to communities in order for them to farm, harvest, even to use alternative farming methods in urban areas such as your Mannenbergs, your Mitchell's Plains, your Khayelitshas, all of that. We need those kind of innovative interventions to be supported by the department. And on the lessons learned, it is a shame that the department did not mention that the failure the aggressive regulatory measures and how that brought a breakdown between the department, especially in Gauteng, and the people who supported food security to our people. We must see that as a lesson learned. Otherwise, we go back to regulations in a regulatory framework instead of facilitation and partnering with organizations on the ground. I thank you, Chair, for indulging me. Thank you.
Chairperson. Hello.
Mombad, it's your turn. I muted myself.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'm not going to be long. I understand that you have tried just to be frank with me. The only thing that I would like to raise, Chairperson, is this one of the Khuseleka Stock Centers. You know, I just want to ask from the department, can't they strengthen their relationship with NPA in terms of the, what were those called? But those centers that were dealing with the gender-based violence, especially women, because you might find that some of them are not working. They are underutilized. Can't we rather continue where the NPA stopped in terms of those centers that were built or that were inserted, that were put closer to the police stations, rather than to start afresh? I understand the aim was to have each center in each district, but we haven't even achieved that. So the Khuseleka centers or the Khuseleka one-stop centers at least are more or less the same with these ones. So can't we try so that we don't start afresh again and again? The other one is this, the CDC centers. I'm worried because you might find out that the CDC centers are not registering because they are encountering a problem in terms of the forms on how to fill them. Maybe let's request the department whether can't they again make it a point that they publicize on how to register for the city centers. Because the important thing is to concentrate on the foundation of the kid rather than to focus on the finishing, or that is grade 12, if you may call it. Because you might get that everyone is interested to hear about the grade 12 results, but not undermining the foundation phase of the kids. So let's rather concentrate on that and keep on applying for more funding in those. Lastly, Chair, let me commend the department. they must keep up the good work in terms of trying to reduce the congestion in during pay times and long queues. That one you can witness even in my area in the Bundus, that at least it has been reduced in terms of the dates that they have set up. So keep on the good work. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mombana. You see, honorable members, communication to ensure clarity in society is priceless. I know it from their past experience when I was an MEC for sport, health, mayor. There's nothing as critical as people interacting with a predictable government, that when I call, I'll be responded to. When I call, I'll be told the truth. People do not always fight because they get what they want. At least they are put in the clear. That is a very priceless thing. So department must intensify this communication so that people can be responded to. I once adopted a slogan somewhere where I used to work to say timelessly with certainty. In other words, you will be responded to within healthy time, and certainly you will be responded to. That's a fundamental tool for establishing a harmonious relationship with society. Society is not comprising of mad people. What actually annoys people, irritates them, is when there is no predictability in their communication between themselves and state institutions, especially those who give service to them. That's why this stop sender thing, Kuseleka, must be intensified. Take into account what Mamvana is saying regarding it. Don't spend money where there's already an infrastructure. Make use of that. Hey, DJ.
Well, thank you. I'm going to give you
time until 10 to.
Okay. I was just about to say we must thank the committee for allowing us to do the entire presentation. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay.
You must thank the chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me ask.
This is the longest ever.
Yes. No, thank you. And let me also appreciate the comments by the honorable members and really also appreciate the fact that honorable members have acknowledged the work that we've done. For us, an important issue, and to your point, Honorable Chair, is to ensure that we are always in touch with the communities that we serve. That's fundamental. I've always said that a principle that I've always operated by is that if a client comes to you and you have the service to render, you must be able to render that service. If we're not able to have that service that renders it, because we are one government, I must know what other government departments are doing. I must be able to take that client and direct them to the relevant person who will be able to assist them. So by the time that client leaves us, they're at a much better place than they were that when they come to us. That for me is service delivery, and that is ensuring that we are always engaging with our clientele. So thank you very much for that, honorable members. Let me ask Isabella to start and respond quickly to the ECD matters. And then immediately after Isabella, I'll ask Caesar to respond to some of the issues, particularly around the shelters, the shelter movements, the work that we've done there. And then Peter on the issues around food, the coordination of food. And then I'll ask the CEO of NDA and the CEO of SAFSA to come in. Come, Isabella. And then I will just round up with about two comments.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Who is starting?
Isabella.
Isabella.
Isabella, please come in.
I am here.
Is it okay. Isabella or Isabella?
Isabella.
Whatever. Proceed.
Italian name. Thank you.
Okay, all right.
Okay. Please. No. Okay.
Chairperson, in terms of Bangasali, we received 53,987 ECD programs that responded to the campaign or to the project, and we've got these numbers disaggregated according to type of program, and which I must say that the ECD centers are at the majority with 41,735, and the
you don't want us to see you.
Oh,
proceed.
Okay, so I'm saying this information is disaggregated according to type, but also according to provinces. And we are in the second phase of Bangasali because the main purpose of us calling the ECDs is for us to ensure that we support the ECDs to ensure that they register. So we are in the second phase of Bangasali. Currently, what we have done, we've been able, to come up with a plan of massification, and we have already, moved in terms of the progress that we have made. We are saying that we have already appointed the district champions in each and every province, and we are planning for this month to brief all the provinces according to districts, different categories of them who will be participating in the project itself. And we are also planning, Chairperson, to launch, this phase two of the project before the end of this October. This week will be in Mpumalanga. We have been able to come up with the workflows tools that we need to digitalize, and working together with our IT. We are working with IT, yes, MIS, to ensure that we digitalize. We're working with a new leaders foundation that are assisting us in this regard. And we have been able to upload, those ECDs that we're talking about on the tool so that, it becomes very easy. Now we're going to Mpumalanga so that we can be able, to pilot that, to ensure that, we are able to track the application, through a system. We don't miss any program. And we will be able to also, through the jamborees that you're talking about, we want to empower ECDs to be able, to complete the applications. The jamborees, they mean that we need to ensure that we've got a package for all each ECD, which includes, the form that is needed, the constitution, and the checklist. So in other ways, we're making it very easy for ECDs, for them to understand what is it that is expected from them, so that when they submit application, there's no to and fro. We are able, to process their application. And once that is done, we are going to do the site assessments. And then as we do that, we continue to also communicate with the sector about the project so that they understand, what is it that is expected from them, and they know about the project so that even the community itself can be able to understand what is going on. So in terms of the support that we are rendering to ECDs, we have spoken about the PPEs, the money that we have repurposed for PPEs, and we have been able to do so. The provinces are continuing, to support ECDs in that regard. I will leave the other one, to our acting DG, in terms of the other area where we're supporting ECDs. Thank you
very much, Issa. Can Caesar come in quickly? Caesar? Just on the shelters movement. Caesar, okay, let's take Peter. Peter, please come in.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members, for your valuable comments. We always appreciate and think that we will make this country through your comments, and we can go from strength to strength and better the services that we have. We always appreciate, Chairperson, we always appreciate the comments from the committee.
Honorable members, my apology. It appears that I've got a challenge of attending a chair's meeting at 12:30. A meeting which is always very dangerous to miss. Can I ask, is Olawu Stock around? Has it disappeared?
I'm here, Chairperson.
Can you chair the meeting?
Okay, no problem.
I request that members allow me to attend the parliamentary chairs meeting. Am I allowed?
Where is it?
Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Can you proceed, Peter?
Thank you very much, Chairs and the Second Chair for the time. There's two, three things that I will respond to, and some of them are just to give the information to the members as you have requested. With regard, first of all, I think the first one I need to take is the issue of the multi-sectoral ministerial advisory committee that has been established by the two ministers, Minister of Social Development and the Minister of Health. The committee is comprised of members from the civil society, interfaith, traditional leaders, traditional healers, and the members and some members of the community, and it comprised of 41 members from the civil society. The committee advises the ministers, including Minister of Police, Minister of COCTA, and any other ministers that they deem fit. They request that minister to attend the meeting. And the committee used to meet weekly on Wednesday, 3 to 6. Now it's meeting every second week, 3 to 5. And they produce advisory. Health and Social Development becomes the secretariat for this committee. It is chaired by Bishop Mpumulwana. And it deals with a lot of things that they advise the ministers on the issue of COVID and the implication of COVID within the community, and also advise what government need to do on that front from the civil society organization. The Minister of Police and Minister of COCTA are part and parcel, but they only attend when they're invited, when they want to discuss issues pertaining to those. Up to so far, more than seven advisories has been written to the ministers, on starting with the funerals, which most of the interfaith, they were holding it, the issue of the circumcision schools and interventions. So there's so many things that they advise the minister on that they must take cognizance of. The second issue was the issue on the food security. The department distributed food parcels since the COVID started in March, and we know the challenges that we experienced. But as the 350 started, we have seen the dwindling numbers of the food parcels distributed. We used to distribute from 254,000 per month. We are now only distributing 63,000, and it's only Gauteng and Limpopo that are distributing the food in those areas. We have looked at the system, and as you have proposed, members of the portfolio committee, we have taken that. We were in the process of reviewing what we need to do, and also including the issues of e-voucher. For the department, we haven't done the e-voucher system as such, because it's quite a tedious thing that we still need to look at the feasibility and also look at a procurement of those, and it's quite a hectic one. But on the other side, from SASSA, I think they will report in terms of the e-voucher system that we have. Currently, for the past 2 months, it's only two provinces that are reporting on food parcels. It's only Gauteng and Limpopo that has for August and September And we receive donations on the food that we also distribute accordingly. The challenges that we experience in terms of the dwindling of the food parcel distribution is that I think the budget provinces have, remember, they requested that we should request budget from Treasury, which the DG will report on that. Budget finished in most of the seven provinces, that's why they are not distributing. Other questions was the issue of the CNDCs. Remember, the CNDCs were closed because of distancing and maintenance of the good health standards so that we should not infect people. We then, under level one, requested that they should be open, but not just open. They should go through a rigorous process of being ready to operate, and firstly operate on a takeaway basis where people need to queue and get the food and they go and eat in their own homes. As of the moment, none of those have opened except of the hybrid system that Western Cape uses. We have seen, and I think honorable members, you need to have this one. Once we are on level one, schools has opened, which means that the number of kids that were hungry now are eating at school. ECDs have opened, meaning that some kids that are at ECDs are eating at ECDs. Dropping center have opened. Old age homes and active aging program is opening, meaning that the burden on the food security program specifically have been reduced, except the number that have added when people get unemployed and others. So meaning that our food security program is taking place at ECD, CNDC, at schools when they are open, old age home and in drop-in centers. That takes some of the pressures that we had during April, May, June, when we were still on level 2 and 3. And yeah, I think those are the things that we need to take cognizance of. We welcome that you will need to do a site visit on the CNDCs when they are full open. We will we will do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter. Can I quickly ask the CEO of the NDA to come in and respond? And immediately after the CEO of the NDA, through your chair, then the CEO of SASA. And then I will come in just to add a few points. Thank you very much. Oh, sorry. I omitted to include the issue of shelters. If Cesar can quickly just respond to that before CEO of NDA, my sincere apologies. Cesar? Cesar? You're muted. Okay, let's go to the CEO of NDA. CEO, Ms. Mzobe.
Hello, I'm Ina. Can you hear me?
Yeah, please be quick. You okay. Can respond to the issue of shelters.
On the issues of shelter, the GBV, quickly with regards to the hotspots, we have developed the GBV as hotspot emergency response plan with all the 9 provinces to make sure that we respond to the issues that to respond to those issues or challenges. We will come back when we are ready with the consolidation to present and share the plan with the committee. Number two, the with regards to sheltering services, we have acknowledged that we've got a serious challenges around sheltering services. We are therefore developing an integrated intersectoral plan, a policy that would begin to assist us and make sure that we are able to respond comprehensively to issues of funding, to issues of LGBTI, to issues of families within the shelters. So there's quite a lot of issues around shelters. And the quick way of dealing with it is also to ensure that there's a policy that will enable us to respond to all the challenges. So we are currently busy with the policy, and the policy is going to be finalized in this financial year. Then the issues of funding for shelters, we are also supporting, the provinces are funding them, but over and above what provinces are doing, we are also strengthening their funding by funding them through CARA and many other resources that we are mobilizing, because we are fully aware that the funding that they are receiving is not enough. And we've also raised the issues with Treasury. Treasury is also aware that we are, as a department, we are not receiving adequate funding. Hence, it becomes even difficult for us to meet all the requirements that are needed by the service providers or the civil society. However, those are some of the things that we are continuously addressing. Then the last issue, one member raised the issue of the Kuseleka in Northwest. I think Kuseleka in Northwest. That yes, of course, some of the existing they are not fully functioning the way they are expected according to the model, because there is a model that we are following. So for those Kuselekas, what we are doing, we are currently beefing up their funds to make sure that they renovate, they install their CCTVs, they work around the skills development, because one of the things that makes Kuseleka unique or different from any other shelter is the fact that they have a comprehensive skills development center, which is going to empower women and make them more, economically viable and have opportunities. So that is the area that we are working on. So the one in Northwest is one of those that we are working on to make sure that it's up to scratch. The last point on GBV, one member raised the issue of NPA infrastructure, leading one of the structures to say maybe why are we duplicating. Let me just clarify the difference here of those two structures. The NPA is rendering or it's leading the TCCs, the Tuthuzela Care Centers, which is a medical model happening in a hospital setting, and survivors are not allowed to be there more than 48 hours. The bed capacity doesn't allow that. So as a result, that model cannot be able to, respond to issues of women comprehensively. That is why we have come up with it, Kuseleka, to say, if, for instance, you come via TTC and it's 48 hours, you have to leave and you've got nowhere to go, you have a Kuseleka that is there that will be able to accommodate you for plus minus 6 months. So that is a difference, and we have linked all these facilities so that we are able to complement each other. Then the last point is on alcohol. Yes, the measures that were proposed to the NAT joint and various structures, the sector has agreed that those are the measures that would really help us to cap the abuse of alcohol. However, we will need the legislation to ensure that those measures are implemented. Without the legislation, there's no way we'll be able to reduce or cap the abuse of alcohol. So we are currently working with DTI, because they are leading the amendment liquor bill. We are meeting with them as well as the Department of Health to look at advertising and all those measures. There is a task team that the DG is leading that we have established to make sure that those issues are addressed. I think those are all the issues from my side. Thank you.
I think the one thing you should have indicated is that we actually have responded to the letter from the shelters movement.
We have actually
responded to that letter, and we are engaging the shelters movement, including National Treasury, for financial support. We're very much aware of the challenges around the funding for shelters, and I think we have put some plans in place to try and address those. We are certainly not ignoring those matters. These are serious matters that we are taking forward. Can I then ask the CEO of NDA, followed by the CEO of SASA?
Thank you. Thank you, ADG. It's Anthony Bower, who's running the CARA program, managing the CARA program within NDA, and good morning to the chairperson and the honorable members. Just two issues that I heard that were raised. I think it's in terms of the list of the CARA list. I think that one is available. We will then provide that through the Department of Social Development. The second thing that I think is very the difference of those organizations that have been funded in the different provinces. I just want to indicate that it was an open call for proposals, and therefore we could not change. What we've received, we based on the proposal that we received, we then adjudicated or assessed and recommended for funding. And lastly, I think what I also need to indicate is that we should not see CARA as a program on its own, but if we look at the GBV and F support, we will note that even in those provinces where we have less that were funded through the RFP process would have been funded through Department of Social Development within the provinces. And perhaps we need, when we report, just add those where support has been given through the provinces. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Anthony. Is there anything else, CEO, that you'd like to raise from NDA side in response to the questions, or are you covered? Okay, let's then go to the CEO, Sasa. CEO?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the Portfolio Committee. I just want to also just highlight the appreciation of the support and the guidance that we always get. And Honorable Ngwenya, we did take your challenge to ensure that people can indeed be able to apply for their grants digitally when you complained that people are not able to apply when they're actually in hospital. So in future, that is going to be enabled with ease. But again, we understand that it is going to be a journey. I will ask Diane to help me on the disability side, but also on the issues that are related to ensuring that how many doctors do we have and what is available. And she will also speak to the issue of how are we going to deal with the issue of appeals. And I understand and accept the frustration from members regarding the fact that it's taken this long. We needed to make sure that with their directions are done in terms of how we're going to deal with this, but also needed to make sure that because the applications actually for those people that are appealing comes through, they come through the email. In terms of pulling the data, it does become a bit of a challenge, but we're managing it and we'll make sure that we respond as soon as we can. On the issue of the call center integration, I think it's very important to highlight the fact that we're going to look at two different stages. The first urgency is for us to make sure that we can have an interim call center for SASA so that we can be able to deal with the customer queries and complaints. As we know, our numbers have increased drastically. And on an integrated one, we're looking at how do we in future, which we're both look together with DSD, looking at how are we going to make sure that when we have a call center of the future, it can actually be integrated and respond to all the issues. So it's work in progress, but it's something that we think is important so that we can have all the issues being resolved in one particular place. I think I want to highlight also on the issue of the vouchers. We have on our side already continued to look at the procurement process for the vouchers. So we've done the terms of reference. It's going through our procurement process in terms of the voucher, the e-voucher that we will have in future. We've engaged the regions. Some of the regions already currently have a manual voucher that they have used in the past that we are thinking of utilizing whilst we await the process of getting of putting in place the e-voucher of the future. So that's what we are investigating, and we should be able to roll it out as soon as we can. But it's not being implemented yet because we had to understand from the regions as to what suppliers do they have who are close to the communities, because that's what becomes important. But also, it's important to highlight that the idea is for us not to ever go back to food, particularly as SASA, because it just creates a whole lot of challenges. So the voucher will only be what we use in future, and that's what we're going to be implementing.
but we will advise the portfolio committee members in terms of which regions are going to be able to begin to roll it out as sooner, particularly focusing on the issue of the kids that are going hungry. We thought that should be the first point of call for us to make sure that the children, in partnership with health, that we can make sure that we provide that support whilst we look at the others. The issue of the post office, I think this is a partner that is extremely, extremely challenged. And I think more than anything else, they've been challenged by the issues that relate to the leadership for a long time. But I want to believe that the minister has resolved most of the issues, because now they have a board from both sides, from both Post Bank and the post office, so that we can make sure that they can actually manage that. Both ministers have established a structure whereby we engage on a operational level in terms of resolving the issues, but we also engage with the ministers on a monthly basis to report back to them on issues that we've resolved. We understand and agree that it is a huge challenge that the post office faces, but unfortunately we as SASSA cannot be the only ones that save the post office for them to be able to deliver all the services that they actually need to provide. The other challenge that we had previously was, again, because of the separation between post office and post bank, but we believe the minister has been able to align the focus in terms of both structures, which I believe, barring the issues that have to do with financial support, that we can be able to resolve most of the issues. The issue of cash, we actually, in terms of how we provide payment, particularly when it comes to the 350, we actually pay the money into the accounts upfront before the clients actually are told to go and get the money. And we know that in some instances, clients have gone and didn't find money. And we've agreed that in terms of the issue of the SMS, is that the SMS to the client be sent by us as per the agreement with the post office as to how many clients can they be able to serve at a particular time. I know that we have not been able to resolve it in terms of this partnership quick enough, but it's work in progress. And I think with the intervention by the ministers, we should be able to meet each other quicker in terms of making sure that these issues get resolved. On the request for us to come and report back on the issue of fraud that is taking place in our environment, and also particularly in the environment of the post office with regards to cards, because the cards are actually issued by the post office and not necessarily by us through their partnership with Post Bank. We will make arrangements through the chair and actually come and give input to the portfolio committee in terms of where are the bottlenecks, where is fraud happening, what is it that we've done? As you've noted, there's been quite a number of arrests on the side of SASSA, but also what interventions are being put in place, both on the side of SAPO, and we've been working together with SABRIC, with the banks, and also the risk committees that look after fraud in the banking space holistically, to make sure that we understand how we can actually stop this level of fraud that is taking place. I will ask Diane to talk to the issue of disability grants, and also to talk to the issue of how do we ensure that we can pay people as soon as we can, and the process with regards to those people that have indicated that that have actually asked for review in terms of the 350. Thank you very much, Chair. Diane?
Thank you so much, CEO, and good morning, Honourable Members, Honourable Chair. I'll talk just to the 3 points very quickly. Firstly, on the reconsiderations, which is the number of questions that came in. I think I wanted to clarify that the October directions that have been signed that we made mention of in the presentation just allowed us to do the reconsiderations by looking at inflows into the bank accounts of people. The directions that had been signed in August actually introduced the legal framework for people to appeal the decision of not being approved for the 350 grant. So it is work that we've been doing subsequent to the August directions. We currently sitting with 60,306 requests for reconsideration, that those are the ones that have not yet been dealt with, that we will now be able to deal with in terms of the direction signed in October. The way that we will deal with these is to look at whether there was any inflow in the preceding month into their bank account, but also to match them against the updated and refreshed database that we've received from the Unemployment Insurance Fund. We did have challenges with getting information from them, but we now have an agreement, and we are expected to get that refreshed database in the course of this week, which would help us to deal with the reconsiderations. However, in August, we actually went through the process of applying the means test, which has since been taken out of the directions, but we applied the means test and 1.9 million people were declined. Those have all already been reconsidered and have been put into payment on the reconsidered decision. So it's not as though we haven't done any reconsiderations. We did those for August. We're now left with the 60,000. We also were looking at a process of possibly doing reconsideration for everybody who had been declined, but it really just is not affordable. It would take us more than 5 billion rand over the available budget. So it can't be done, and therefore we will only deal with those that people have lodged requests for reconsideration. So it is very important if people challenge the decision that has been made around their application, that they actually do put in the reconsideration request so that they can be added to the 60,000 base that we've got and dealt with. The time frame to be able to deal with all the reconsiderations is we're really aiming for end of October, but certainly by mid-November that would be done. It won't be an automatic payment, but it would be payments for the people that are approved on reconsideration.
Hey, Gigi, you are living on borrowed time.
Sorry, Chi, I'm going to finish in 2 minutes. Gigi,
yeah.
I'm just about done. So just to say, please, to remind people to lodge the appeals, and the time frame, as I said, would be certainly mid-November at the latest. Mm-hmm. Around the disabilities, and the question was raised about how many doctors have exited the contracts that we had. We've had 6 doctors who have exited the contracts that we had, and then we had a further 3 doctors who passed away. So exited, but not by choice. The 6 actually exited by choice. And I think those were the most important ones, the other ones who would be able to provide responses in writing. Thank you, DT. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies. I know we are on borrowed time by 3 minutes, but there's just 3 points I'd like to raise quickly. One is that there's a lot of discussions around the basic income grant, and we are very much aware of discussions both within the sector and, of course, within our space that we are in as well. And we know the calls, we've heard the calls, et cetera, and we're very much aware of that. I want to say that we're looking at some policy work with the relevant government departments, as well as within the NEDLAC space. We're looking at modalities, phasing in of various processes, or how we would think about going about this, and as well as financing options, which is the biggest issue around the fact that it's going to have, or rather it's going to cost a lot of money, and we need to look at various options in that regard. So we're looking at that. The other point I want to raise that members have spoken to is the fact that when Dr. Harrison came to the portfolio committee and presented on the issues of alcohol, we've taken some of those issues and we've begun to embed them in some of the work that we do. But most importantly, we have been having discussions and meetings with Dr. Harrison and the colleagues at DG Marie Trust. And we've been engaging with them around substance abuse in general and a number of other issues. We're meeting them on Friday, actually, again. And I've personally been part of those meetings. And I can tell you that we are in the process of finalizing a memorandum of agreement between us so that we're able to leverage on some of the good work that they've been doing. So we're listening to the issues that come to the portfolio committee, and we're following through adequately on those areas. And I personally have been in those meetings with Dr. Harrison and his team. So we're making significant progress in that regard. I wanted to say to Honorable Lizelle that, the status of ECD NGOs in the Eastern Cape has increased drastically. or rather the payment. They were at 37% the last time we had a conversation with them. They've put measures in place. They are now sitting at 74% in the space of about 2 to 3 weeks, which is a considerable jump in terms of the payment of MPO. So there's good work happening in that regard. Yesterday, I convened the provinces, all provinces again, to get a sense of where the status is at. And I must say that we've seen a significant increase in terms of the payment there too. Let me also say to Honorable Abrams that the issue around the hotspots, the alignment of the hotspots and the support to CSOs in specific hotspots, I actually picked that issue up as soon as the hotspots came up. And I then tasked the team to do an exercise to determine where we are supporting CSOs, whether they are in those hotspots and whether there's a correlation. So we are busy with that exercise and we can gladly share with you once we've concluded work in that regard. So those are some of the points. Maybe the last point I want to raise is the fact that I feel that, and I raised this with SASA, my own view is that we possibly could have gathered much more data from the recipients who have applied for the 350 grant. That data would have assisted us with a range of things. And let me just give you one point where I thought that's an element where I thought we could have...
You have not forgotten, ADG, the borrowed time.
Yes. Just the one point. The president is about to announce economic recovery plan. Often when we're in the social sector, we think that the economic recovery plan is left to the economic class to deal with, etc. It's not the case. The economic recovery plan is a plan about people.
Which print is this?
The economic recovery plan is a plan about people. That's my understanding. And we should find resonance as the social cluster within the space of the economic recovery plan. When that infrastructure and a number of other areas that the president will speak to is being dealt with, we must be able to say as a social cluster, here are the people and these are the kind of skills that they have. These are the people that are benefiting from grants. And I think we could have done this even now with the 350 grant. We could have gotten much more data to get a thorough assessment of what the status of people are that are applying for the grant. You'll find that some are actually skilled people, but they don't have any work. You'll find that some are actually artisans in some areas, but they don't have access to work. And I think that what we could have possibly done, these are just lessons that we could have that we learned, is have a more a detailed data set around the people that are applying for the grant so that we can be able to begin to plug them into economic opportunities, particularly around the plan that the president will announce tomorrow. So, Chair, I thought, let me just say that very quickly. The colleagues have touched on all the other areas, and we are very glad. Oh, yeah, the minister launched over the weekend in KZN and in the Free State a program which is called Askulume. This is a fundamental program to get members of the clergy or interfaith leaders to start talking. And we're launching this program, and the minister is, within the context of the district development model. She did it in, Lejwe Biputsa, district in the Free State, and again in Etegwini over the weekend. And these are conversations around gender-based violence and the killing of women and the killing of children that members of interfaith community are beginning to have. Here's what we're hoping to achieve with this program, that we begin those conversations so that people are much more aware, not just within the interfaith space, but even beyond that, that these conversations would begin to unfold.
Thank
even
you,
in engagement, community-related structures, etc.
Thank you,
so let me just leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. You are doing the president's work now. Once you start being presidential, you must announce that you've got intentions. And we can start your campaign now. Thank you very much, ATG.
I'm glad I'll have the support of the committee chair as the first.
Yes, I'll support you. Don't worry.
Thank you very much, ADG. Thank you very much, department, for the work done. There's still numerous spaces for improvement. Otherwise, you were received positively today. The next item, Linda.
Chairperson, the next item is the adoption of the quarterly report.
Thank you very much. That's an internal business, but which is not confidential, ATG. Yeah, you can stay if you want. If you don't, you can go. It doesn't matter. Because you're not going to participate.
I will try and continue with the campaign.
You are not going to participate in this one. Honorable members, we are tabling before you 2019-20 quarter 1, 2, 3, 4 reports for adoption, which were processed. But what was not done was adoption. We are tabling them before you. My assumption is that they were circulated.
Yes, Chairperson. They were circulated.
Honorable members, you can choose whatever report you want to choose. If you want to talk about quarter one, but all of them are being tabled before you from 1 to 4. Where are the members of the portfolio committee?
Just for clarity, Chair, this is Bridget Masango. I just would like to know,
I can hear you.
You are tabling the reports for us to approve as having discussed them and engaged with the reports. Am I understanding you to be saying that?
The convention that they are tabled for adoption.
Yeah, yes, I wanted to say adoption.
So I don't want to use a lot of language.
Okay, no, I understand. So there is no discussion, just adoption? Or
no,
not
no.
Adoption.
You, when reports are here, they were discussed.
Yes, I know.
Now, if you want to raise something, you can raise it, but take into account they were discussed. I don't have an issue.
Okay.
In other words, whatever we discuss now, whether people were properly quoted or there's grammar and whatever and so on.
Okay. Chair, what I would like to say, when I was going through the reports, for me, they seemed to cover the areas that we discussed. And also, what they did also was to say maybe at a later stage when the program allows, we can go back to especially what, the action steps. Because I was quite, I think the word is impressed, with the way that they were, the reports were sort of written. And when the time comes in this meeting, one will be able to then, propose adoption and things like that. But I just want to know, to ask that or propose that there are issues that don't need reiteration now, but there are issues that when the program allows, at a later stage, we can go back to those issues that were raised in those reports. Thank you, Chair.
Quarter 1 to quarter 4, honorable members, are before you. Okay, let me start by sequence now. Quarter 1, any opposition to the adoption or any proposal for adoption?
I would like to propose adoption, Chair.
Thank you. Any seconder?
I will second, Chairperson, Honorable Fanamarva.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I know Honorable Masango was the second, seconding member is Honorable Member.
It's me, Honorable Fanamarva, Chairperson. I'll second.
Ah, no, my apology. Oh, pretty girl, my apology.
Thank you.
Quarter 2, any proposal for adoption?
Am I allowed to propose again?
Yeah, you know, if they don't want their reports, you can propose on Honorable Masango. Proceed.
No, you forbade me at some stage because I was proposing everything, but I would like to propose.
So Honorable Masango again is proposing adoption. Any second, Dan?
I second Honorable Chairperson, Dikang Stock.
Honorable Dikang second. Third quarter report, any proposal?
I will move for the adoption, Chairperson. It's Honourable Funamata.
Peace. Thanks, Honourable Funamata. Seconder?
I'm seconding, Chair. Honourable Mvana.
Honourable Mvana. Fourth quarter report, proposal?
I will move for the adoption, Chairperson. It's Honourable Funamata.
Honourable Funamata. Yo. Seconder?
I would like to second Chair Bridget Masango.
Yo. Thank you. Honourable member, there being no counter, four quarter reports are adopted. Thank you very much. Next item. Lynette?
I, Chair, maybe omitted. There's also a report for the first quarter of 2020-2021.
But it's not, I didn't see it on the agenda. Is it there?
Yes, Chair.
Oh, Honourable Member, there is a report by the panel led by former President Honourable Khalima, which we all know, which belongs to the Fifth Administration, which its processes were not completed. Now are completing its processes. We went through it here during this administration. What is left now is adoption. Is it adoption for noting by Parliament, for noting by National Assembly?
Honourable Stock, I'm moving for the adoption, Honourable Chair.
Any seconder?
I will second, Chairperson, Honourable Funamata.
Thanks, Honourable Funamata. Next item, you are interested, Honourable Ntsabo, but the way you do your work, you're honourable anyway. Ms. Ntsabo?
Thanks, sir. Chairperson, is the four sets of minutes as well as the program, the fourth term program, so we can decide which one you want to set first.
Give us the sequence of the dates of the minutes. Unmute yourself.
Sorry, Chair. Sorry, members. The sequence is as follows. It's the 26th of October, the 2nd of September, the 6th of October, as well as last week, the 14th of October.
Start again, 26th of?
August.
Yes.
2nd of September, Chair.
Yes.
The 6th of October, when we did the Children's Amendment Bill, as well as last week's, the 14th of October.
So it's 26th August, 2nd September.
6th October.
6th October.
And 14th October.
All right. Chair. Honourable Member, 26th August, 2020, minutes.
Chairperson, the minutes are outdated. They are stale. So I think let's adopt them.
let me ignore your remarks, Honourable Mvana.
I'm adopting the ones of the 26th
August. Any seconder?
I will second.
Thank you, all member. 2nd September, any proposal for adoption?
I'd like to propose adoption, Chair. Let's bridge it.
Seconder?
Vana second, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Vana. October the 6th, am I right? Yes.
Yes, Chair.
Proposal?
I propose, Honourable Chair, the Council.
Any seconder?
I will second, Chairperson, Honourable Funamata.
Thank you, Honourable Member. 14th October. When are you proposing? When are you delicious?
She's having
the last second, the chair was disconnected. I don't know what you're doing now.
All right, remember the minutes of the 14th of October.
I would like to propose adoption, Chair.
Sorry, yes, sir. Can I just come in?
Who's just coming?
Yoli, sir.
Yes, Yoli.
I just maybe want to clarify from Mrs. Lynn. The 14th of October is today. Maybe she got the dates wrong.
Last week what? Yeah. Sorry. Last week yeah. was the 6th, yeah.
Hi. Sort out the dates.
Last week was the 7th.
Let me look.
It was the 7th last week.
7th, yes, yeah, 7th.
7th.
Yeah. I saw the
And
meeting.
Then the next one?
So we are done.
No, but
it
why
was the 7th.
Did we not meet last week Tuesday, which was the 6th?
7th, ma'am.
Yeah.
Sorry, it was the 7th when we did the
4th was on Sunday. The 5th was on Monday. The 6th was on Tuesday.
And we met on Tuesday.
Yes.
It was the 6th, not the 7th.
Yes, Chair. We scheduled for 2 days last week, 6th and 7th, but we've concluded the business on the first day, which is the 6th.
Correct.
For the briefing on Children's Armament Bill.
So, which makes it the 6th?
Yes, Chair. So, we've got only 2 sets.
So, we don't have 14.
No, we don't have. Sorry, we've got only 3 sets.
How did 14 crop?
I think I was busy as well preparing the agenda.
Yes, but just... you're exposing us because we're also adopting that thing which doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Mandy.
Hello, ma'am.
Yes, please rectify my initials. It's LH, not LA. In all the minutes, ma'am.
No, I'll do so.
Visa initials?
Member Iris.
No, we have an extra visa initials. And when I land, you don't know Afrikaans.
Dit is die agbare Aries se initials.
Ja, ek wil dit aanbeveel.
Afrikaans is
prachtig.
Last item, members, is the adoption of the draft 4th term committee program.
Do you want to take us through from today onwards? Because the other work has already been done.
Okay, Chair.
Just read it from today onwards.
Okay, Chair. I'll do so.
Or present it here.
Yes. Today is the 14th, which is we just concluded the business of today. The next date is next week, which is the 21 of October. Yes, ma'am. The next week is scheduled for a briefing by the National Department of Social Development and the Provincial Department on Employment of Social Work Graduates. I think this is an outstanding and critical agenda item that the committee needs to prioritize, as well as the briefing by the DSD and the Provincial Departments on the backlog in the foster care system, also including the submission of an application or for the extension of the deadline to the North Gauteng High Court. In last week deliberation, when we received a briefing on the Children's Armament Bill, and then the committee instructed the department that they need to file to court as soon as possible, requesting extension of the foster care court order. Next week, which is the 27th of October, honorable members.
We advised the department to file. We didn't instruct them.
Yes. So we advised them. Sorry for my wording. We advised them to file because the matter is very urgent. On the 27th, members, we will receive a briefing from DSD and its entities on their 2nd term quarterly financial and non-financial performance for this current financial year, which is 2020-2021. For the subcommittee members and the entire committee, we're supposed to have the conduct interviews on the CDA recruitment process, but the NCOP was, their application was declined. That's why we're utilizing the 27th. Initially, it was scheduled for the interviews. Now, the new dates for these interviews will be on the 3rd until the 5th of November, whereby the subcommittee members will be attending a 3-day to interview the candidates to serve on CDA board. On the 11th of November, which is the following Monday after we've conducted interviews, the subcommittee will meet to discuss and make a recommendation on candidates to serve in the board. And the same week, on Friday, the 13th, a report will be tabled before the entire committee because a subcommittee represents the committee. So a report on the process will be adopted by the full committee, which is on Friday, the 13th of November. Members, I think Chairperson in his opening remarks also alluded the importance of the committee to conduct an oversight on the issues that have been raised in a number of meetings. So we tried to look at the committee, at the parliamentary program, but it's difficult to have a week that is free. There's no plenaries. So the proposal that we're trying to put forward to members is that we either leave Cape Town on Thursday, whatever week we identify, and then have the oversight on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We have a session where we'll debrief and discuss on project we've already received, and then conclude the oversight on Monday, and then we come back on Tuesday morning for the sittings. So we alternatively, the proposed date will be on the 20th to 23rd November 2020, and oversight to visit to KZN. There were issues that were identified critical issues that the committee would require to conduct oversight on in KZN. I think Chairperson and the content advisor they might be in a better position to come up with the focus areas of the oversight visit. So we will submit the application for this oversight visit to KZN. And if not approved, alternatively, on that day, which is Wednesday the 18th, we'll have a briefing by provinces on their GBVF intervention programs. And the next week, which is the 25th of November, that is the last week in Parliament, our last agenda item will be receiving a briefing by the Department of Social Development on its mandate on the people with disabilities function versus that of the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. The briefing would also include programs implemented by the DSD. I think this item was raised by the Deputy Minister in one of our meetings. So that is the program before the committee for consideration and adoption. I thank you very much, Chairperson. Hello, members.
Hi,
what was again?
Hi, Silapha.
My hand is up for.
Okay, thank you.
To make inputs.
Yes. Thank you very much. Over to you, Chairperson.
Done.
Yes, Jim.
Can we? Do you want to speak on the oversight? There were ors and ors there. Can we? Before the committee adopts or not adopt.
Okay, Chair. We spoke about it with you, Chairperson, and basically the issues that you raised during the meeting are the ones that we will focus on. So Sia and I, you have to now to develop a concept document and a program. And also Sia will do some research work in terms of those areas that were identified, Chairperson. And we, as discussed with you, there were two options, Gauteng or KZN. And because of the recent incidences of GBV in the KZN, I just forget now the central area where a number of bodies were found. Okay, then it was a advice of a Chairperson that the committee should maybe rather go to KZN. And also Chairperson, as the discussion today actually helped me, because the department reported that it is in the process of establishing or making a plan to establish the one-stop center. So at least KZN is one of those provinces that were in the yellow. So there is some work that has been done there. So that gives it more motivation for the committee to go there, Chairperson. I don't know if I addressed what you were asking, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable members, that's the term until, what is the last date, Libby? November?
The last meeting will be on the 25th of November.
Are you suggesting that we don't work after that?
In terms of the parliamentary program, the last week, the last sitting, I think it's somewhere on the 28th, and then thereafter there will be a constituency. From 3rd of December to 11th of December.
All right. Okay. All right. Honorable members,
Chairperson,
table for your consideration.
Chair.
Yes.
I just would like, this might be a very administrative point to make. With regards to the interviews of the CDA board, I saw in the program that it's a virtual meeting. The chair had mentioned, and I tend to agree with him, that those interviews might need to be done physical sort of space rather than virtual. I just want some clarity on that, if that has changed.
No. Thanks, Honorable Masango. I think you know that was the position of the committee. What Honorable Masango was saying was the position of the committee. And it was proposed by Lindy herself.
Yes, Jay, I think it's a technical
error. It will be
in Parliament. It's going to be in Parliament.
Chairperson?
Honorable Member?
It's Member Abrams, your chairperson.
Yes, ma'am.
Just on the program, and maybe we can perhaps fit it in on the 21st of October, but on the 6th of October when we were speaking on the Children's Amendment Bill, the department said they'll come back to us and have a further discussion on the issue of adoption fees. So my request would then be, are we still going to do that this year? And if so, maybe the 21st when we deal with the foster care and that section, that we can maybe fit it in there. And then also, Chair, coming from this morning's committee meeting, will there still be time then to fit in a report on the basic income grant this year still? Thanks, Chair.
Let me put it this way. This is the work we propose to do this year. What you are raising, Honorable Abrams, is a matter I also raised with the Connect Advisor. And they were able to remind me on all the issues that we felt we need further discussions with the department. Because the bill is an ongoing issue, we'll still come back after recess, December, deal with it. If the committee wants to discuss those things this year, it's fine, but I thought we've got enough on the table now, but those issues will be taken care of. Does that address the issue?
Noted, Chair, thanks.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I'm waiting for you to adopt the term, the program.
I move to adopt.
I propose an adoption of the program.
There's somebody who spoke before you, Honorable Masango.
It's Honorable Suka's year, Chair, and I said I move to adopt the program.
Okay. Honorable Suka's, okay, second down.
If nobody's speaking before me, I would like to second the adoption of
the Delisiwa is seconding, Honorable Masang. Honorable Ngwenya, I'm trying to protect you for doing your work.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Honorable Ngwenya, adopt. Anything else, Lindy?
That's all, Chair.
We have covered. Just before 12:30. Thank you as always, Honorable Members. Let's meet on Thursday when the President makes in a joint house the presentation on the recovery plan, and we'll engage after that. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Have a good day.
Thank you, Chair. Let's meet at Senegal on Friday. Bye, Chair.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, take your name,
Chair. Bye-bye.
Hey, Wena.